Hello and welcome to another episode of Radio Free Nintendo. This is 438, I think, right?
Correct.
Should be.
Thanks.
Unless we skip one.
Sorry, folks. I'm getting old. 438. And I wasn't here last week. So, James, thank you for hosting. It was wonderful to hear Greg on the show. I'm sorry I didn't get to be on there with him. But there will always be other chances for that. So we have a big show for you, or maybe not
a huge really.
Show for you this
we have,
week.
We have a small
there's
show
only
for
the
you.
Three of us, James and John, of course, joining me as always. Guillaume is on vacation. He's been, he's in Canada. He gets pretty good vacation, people, and he's using it, and we certainly don't begrudge him that.
They're basically
Canadians,
the
Canadians don't
North
work
America.
Anyways. I mean, it's like Europe. You know how in Europe they're always taking vacations? Canada's the same way.
It is similar, and I for one am jealous.
I mean,
but
that's why the U.S. has the nuke. That's all I have to say.
Crippling national level bankruptcy. That's what we're missing here.
Well, if we call John an honorary American, then this is an all-American edition of RFN, a three-man show, the red, white, and blue edition. Sorry, Guillaume.
I mean, technically speaking,
we'll see you next week.
Even if we don't give John that, he's really only missing one color, so we're fine. Because they can't even get their own color.
I mean, I can be the red.
Well,
I can be
white.
The red in this patriotic mix.
I don't want to know why, but anyway, obviously, it's been a tough summer for us to all four get together at the same time. It's happened very little, and that's just the way it is in summertime. Everybody's traveling a lot. I've done my share, certainly. So we try to cover for each other, and as far as I know, next week we will all four be on the show at the same time, and we'll have a four-man RFN. So we do have a lot to talk about today. Other than new business, we're going to get into some recent news, some topics, and maybe a few other kind of things off our heads because we're waiting for the listener mail bucket to refill. I'm sure it will soon.
Can I pause here real quick? John, why aren't you just blowing up all over Johnny about telling people we don't have any listener mail to talk about? Last week, I caught like 7 minutes of shit.
What? I mean,
I'm not complaining about it. I'm just saying it's a fact. And
equitable treatment.
We're doing something else.
Let me talk to my union rep, James.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Your podcast union rep?
Mr. Leahy, let me talk to him, and we'll see if we can work something out for you.
Anyway, we are also going to have a special announcement at the end of this episode, so make sure you stick around for that. But first, we're going to get into some new business, and James,
yeah,
could you please? You're as usual. Your new business is a bit of a mystery to me.
Yeah,
and I figure on this, you know, kind of weird show without Guillaume, this three-man show that we don't do very often. Let's start weird.
Let's start weird.
With whatever you've got in your little bag of secrets.
Yeah, my little bag of secrets is not for this podcast. So, I've been experimenting.
It's therapist.
I've been experimenting with the format of the new business preview, which is where I'm just sort of trying to stream, which it just failed miserably today, so that was a good time. Just trying to get video up of my first experience with these kinds of weird games that, because Nintendo has decided that this game is too hot for summer, and by this game they mean every game, I've decided that I've got to fill this time on this podcast with something worth talking about. And by that I mean nothing worth talking about. So, last week is Pokemon Channel, and there's video I put up of that one. And so I picked a bunch of games that I thought are both appropriately weird that they could firebomb this section with their weirdness, and also appropriately stupid that if you were to watch them, you would think, what's wrong with this guy? Why did he do this to himself? And this time, this segment is brought to you by Sega, Gearbox, and Randy Pitchford. Because I am playing not Alien Colonial Marines. I'm playing Samba de Amigo for the Wii. Brought to you, which is actually made, shockingly enough, by Gearbox Software.
Samba de Amigo, the prequel to Aliens Colonial Marines.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same partnership and the same
spiritual predecessor.
It's in the same
in a
universe.
Lot of ways. In a lot of ways, it is a spiritual predecessor to Alien Colonial Marines. One thing I want to say before, and I'll leave Mr. Pitchford and his assholishness out of it, which is what inspired me to buy this game. You know, he had another flare up of Pitchforditis, where he basically said, no, we did everything by the book on Colonial Marines. We lost a lot of money. That's how you know the system works. Was that there was always this people who seemed surprised that that game was bad, but I think people forgot that Gearbox is actually a bad development studio, that they've made one good game and that everything else they've made has been bad. So here's your reminder. Samba de Amigo is bad. If you don't remember the original Samba de Amigo, it was a Dreamcast game that came with these plastic maracas, like real frickin' maracas that you plugged into the Dreamcast. And then you either held them up to the sides or down and shook them in rhythm with music.
Yeah, this was
very
this
early
was,
motion control.
It
game.
Was.
Yeah, and this was well before everybody just started hating peripherals thanks to Guitar Hero and Rock Band.
Yeah, yeah. This was like 2000, 2001.
And this was a Dreamcast game, which means everybody loved it at the time.
Right.
And not always the case with Dreamcast, but this one in particular, I think, is worthy of everyone loving it. Everyone who played it loved it. I've played it. This was a game that showed up at E3 multiple times. Billy Berghammer, humongous fan. My friend Matt Hogan, who went with me to E3, I think in 2001, is like a savant at Samba de Amigo and delighted everyone on the staff with his skills in our hotel room. So it's certainly my favorite Dreamcast game, and the Wii version is a tragedy.
Yes. So
on every level.
So the game has style for days. I mean, it is. How would you describe it? I mean, it sort of reminds me a little bit of cartoonized Central
Black Velvet. Yeah, like Mexican Black Velvet.
Yeah,
cartoon style paintings.
I was thinking a little bit more Mesoamerican pre
or like Aztec drawings.
Yeah, like cartoonized.
There's some of that too. I mean, it is a South American or Central American, you know, themed game. And the art style is very much, it's, you know, a little bit like Guacamole, but
it's quite
different also.
It seems very, very heavily centered on, like, the Yucatan. Like, that's kind of what they're going for. That's kind of, you know, they're all kind of dressed stereotypically, you know, Mexican sombreros and you know, mm-hmm. the ponchos and stuff. So
Cancun.
Yeah. Playing the game, I think my first observation I made when I was playing it was that the music is completely inappropriate. It's
what do you mean by inappropriate?
It doesn't
That's a really weird word to use.
It doesn't match that culturally at all.
I
at one point I thought I was part of Ricky Ricardo's band, which would be Cuban. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, like, it just seemed like anything that said, "Oh, that's got the person who originally sung the song's primary language is Spanish." That's good enough. But on top of that, like, most of the music isn't really maraca based. Like,
it's just like random pop songs.
Yeah,
basically.
It's like, I mean, I don't.
And the original had definitely had more of a like samba and, you know, mariachi flavor to it.
Yeah.
In the song selection, it was a lot of public domain stuff. It was
Which
some original music, I believe, that the people at Sega made, and then it was a couple of Ricky Martin songs in there, which were really fun. I mean, that were my favorite songs in the game.
I mean, this game on the Wii should pretty much just be called Samba de Amigo, presented by a Ricky Martin soundalike, because he is all over this thing. But it's just, there's something about just the biggest sin a rhythm game can make is feeling imprecise. And the second biggest sin a rhythm game can make is when you're on sync, when you're doing it correctly, you don't feel like you're contributing to the song. This game does both of those. So the actual mechanism for play is imprecise in a way that makes it either too easy or too difficult, depending on if you've mastered its imprecision. So essentially, by the time I stopped playing the game, I was playing on hard mode. I'd only been playing for about 20 minutes, and I was getting 98% correct. And pretty much it had devolved into, like, you know, when you first got Wii Sports and bowling, yep. and you were doing like the full bowling swing,
mm-hmm. and then until you figured out how to cheese it.
By the time your aunt wanted to play Wii Sports for the 33rd time, you're barely moving your wrist.
Yeah, you're just like flicking the Wii remote to the right.
You're like buried deep in a lounge chair, just sort of slowing down. that's what the game had devolved into, and that's just not fun. Like, there's something inarguably unpleasant about that whole experience, where you're just sort of, you know, gingerly moving the Wii remote and nunchuck, and you're nailing it. You're perfectly fine on percentage wise.
Yeah, but you're just kind of limp wristedly, you know, like using the minimal effort possible.
Yeah,
and because of the technology that's used in the original Samba de Amigo, which is in some ways more advanced. It's not more advanced. It's just different than the technology right. that's in the Wii remotes. It's completely different, which is part of the problem of translating it to the Wii. But you couldn't play that game sitting down, even.
Yeah.
You had to stand, which means – and also you pretty much had to dance to keep the rhythm on the harder difficulties. So it kind of forced you to participate because it is literally about – it's a distance-measuring device.
Right.
Based on the sound, it can tell how close it is to you. That's why you have to put in your height when you're playing the game, because it has to offset for how tall you are. So, I mean, it's just – it's a completely different technology that, frankly – it just accentuates the game's feel, and it works, and then on the Wii it doesn't.
Right.
Because Wii remotes don't know where you're pointing. They don't care.
Right.
They can't handle that too. With Remote Plus, maybe.
Maybe, but it's just...
Maybe, but they never tried.
Right. So, and it uses a nunchuck, which is even worse than the Wii remote.
Right.
So, I mean...
The nunchuck has very poor motion
control. I could get it to the point... So how it works is you point the Wii remote either at like a V shape away from you and up. And that's your up. I mean, Wii Remote Nunchuck. Down, same way. Down and away. Not just straight down or straight up. It can't handle that. It's got to be at an angle. Or all the way out to the sides, which is basically anything that's not that V. Like, anything that's not that V is registering it as out the sides. So, and then once you've got it pointed, there's a little indicator on screen where you're pointed at, and then you shake it. But the thing is, the game doesn't care if you shake a Wii Remote that's not supposed to be doing anything, or a Nunchuck. So really, you can just flail your arms around and do okay, because it's not penalizing you for just shaking like crazy on the things that aren't notes. But because it's not like the rattle sound, because the actual one was...
That sounds like an easy mode or something. Are you sure that's not a setting?
That was on hard. Yeah, it's not a good game. It's not a good game. But like I said, the biggest problem for me is, A, the music selection is bad. And I just wish that they just put in a bunch of folk music.
Well, how's about this, James? What if you played this with a stuffed baby? Because I happen to have one around here.
Do you know what, John? Maybe I did. What if you could play with the robotic dog?
You could do this with the baby.
You could. Don't shake
the baby, John.
James, I think as a YouTuber, you really need to seize on this pitch.
Oh God! So
opportunities like this don't come around very often
for good reason. I have to make this video.
You know they can ship children pretty quickly these days, James. It could be right at your doorstep.
John's going to get on the list of human trafficking states by himself. I was actually...
Maybe you should do it and basically record yourselves.
You first,
and we'll
John.
We'll sync them up and make you
first,
have a race.
John. I contemplated buying one of the dumb plastic maraca skins for the Wii Remote Nunchuck just to complete the joke, and then realized that I have better things in my life to do with the $3 that would have cost me.
Yeah, I'm glad
like
I was
setting
I feel
it
like
on
I was,
fire.
I feel like I was kind of there to dissuade you from doing
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you were like, this is a bad idea. What's wrong with you?
I mean, and that's coming from me. I mean, when I'm telling somebody not to buy something. Time.
Yeah, John's
I mean,
like, what would you do with them? I'm like, well, I would have nunchucks that also have maraca skins and
I mean,
make noise.
I'm like, ooh, $10 for Lair? Sold! What a deal! You know, it's so
$3 for plastic maraca skins by Nyko. Get the fuck out.
Yeah,
no, we're
like,
not doing this.
You know. There is. I do set a bar. That's below
what
them.
What was amazing about that whole moment was when we found how many people made maraca skins for this game, and we realized they really thought this game was going to be a big success.
Yeah.
There were like 7 or 8 manufacturers who each produced stupid, you know, hard plastic condoms for the Wii Remote Nunchuck that were maracas.
Well, there was a lot of reason to believe that this was going to work if you hadn't actually tried it, and they didn't really ever let anyone try it
for
what
good
I
reason.
It. I don't think
do we
was
call
ever
that the Randy Pitchford
E3
special?
Even.
Not playable but, at E3?
I don't think it was, but it's hard to remember that long ago. But I will say, you know, there was a lot of reason to think that this might have been good because the Dreamcast game is beloved by a small number of people. They're making a sequel to it. It's got a great look to it, and it's on the Wii, which at the time was fabulously popular, and everything
right.
was going crazy, and it's obviously like a family-friendly, casual-friendly rhythm game that should be really fun, and it's a sequel. It's a known quantity. Like, there's every reason to think this was going to be a much bigger hit than the original game, but it's a pile of garbage.
it's kind of like...
So, and people figured it out, you know? People were like, no, this sucks.
This is
bad. Not good. This is not worth... They lost the word of mouth from the people who actually knew what Samba de Amigo was. That could have fueled that fire a little bit.
What's amazing about this game, to me, is just... I look at the things that I say, like, what did they have to do to make this work? They had to make the rhythm feel good. It doesn't. They had to give it some challenge. It doesn't have it. They had to feel like you had, like, deterministic control. Kinda. They had to nail the style, which they do most of the time, but sometimes it just completely falls all over itself for some reason. Like, these, like, clip art graphics that tell you you need to flail your arms now. Like, they just look so cheap. The interface of the little balls moving up there is so just not good, and it's not, you know, it's not visually, it's visually hard to follow because it's just a little ball moving across, you know, the space where all the stuff's happening in the background. They didn't master that, like, making the gameplay space that work, that things like Rock Band and even further back like DDR had nailed. Like, you could tell.
Well, to be fair, I think this has a little more in common with Rhythm Tengoku.
It does, but Rhythm Tengoku,
you're mostly just playing rhythm, so the pattern itself doesn't matter that much.
But the thing is, like, you don't feel like you're part of the song, so you can't use the song to really tell you what to do, and you have to know where to hold the Wii remote to do it. So the little balls is actually super important because it tells you where to point the thing.
Yeah, I guess that is more important than anything in Rhythm Heaven. But I do think the graphics of the game are intended to distract you a little bit.
Yeah, and that's fine. I think it's just that the part that is telling you what to do isn't enough of the screen, and it doesn't stand out enough. They could still be distracting,
yeah.
But there's
yeah.
It's just not visually.
That's something
distinct.
That, like, Donkey Konga does very well.
Yes, exactly.
It's really clear what the pattern is and what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm shocked that Lowrider wasn't one of the songs on this thing soundtrack. I mean, that's really what you're dealing with here. It's just stuff like that. You're dealing with remixes of, like, Chumbawamba. It's like, what's happening? Where am I?
Yeah, that's painful.
But there's a big DLC shot for it. It's apparently just full of the exact same stuff. It's like, oh my god, I don't want a bunch of sound alikes that I shake the Wii Remote to indistinctly while you make rattly sounds. It's conceptually
so sad.
Bad.
Soulless.
I mean, on paper, this would be amazing, and I get why someone thought that this might work out really well, but they should have tried it. They should have looked at it and said, oh, this actually doesn't work.
And
we tried a lot of programming tricks.
Company.
You know, we tried a lot of different fine tunings of the motion controls. They just never feel right. They never really have a connection the way that you did with that other controller. And that old Maraca controller for Dreamcast is too expensive for us to make again. So we should cancel this idea, and they decided to go ahead and make it anyway, and it's an embarrassment.
Here's the thing. You might be able to do it. You might be able to. I mean, I don't trust the dev team that made this game to do anything correctly. So, like, that's not surprising that it didn't work.
Yeah. The crazy thing is, like, you could totally do this with a PlayStation Move.
Yeah. You could
I think it has all the technology. It has magnetometers, and you could almost imagine, like, a VR version of Samba de Amigo, because they're using the moves with Morpheus.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But
and that would be really trippy.
That would require Sega. That would require Sega to have money to invest in games, which they don't currently have.
But then you can make maracas or swords or whatever. It's like we virtualize all the shitty plastic peripherals that were sold for Wii games.
Yes. I mean,
your tennis racket is now, you just see it. It doesn't matter that it's not really there. You see it and it feels real.
Sega's blown their VR budget on getting attitude for their Sonic the Hedgehog Twitter account. So there's no money left in the budget to do VR Samba de Amigo. I want to say, though, one thing about this game that is the most baffling, besides the minigames, which I'm not even going to talk about. It's in the video. It's ridiculous. They're awful. Is the menus are unbelievable. Like Johnny, this is kind of your thing, and I always go, like, whatever, they're fucking menus, I don't care. The menus in this game are unbelievable. Like, they're just, they look like they're off a flat, they look like they're off a flash page from, like, 1998.
Well, can you at least control them with the pointer?
Yes, but the pointer's kind of...
They're better than the Dreamcast menus.
That's true.
Which you had to control with the maracas.
Which
is a disaster.
Oh, that's beautiful. They're weirdly jittery, though. The Wii Remote pointer in this game, it's weirdly just, like, kind of bouncing like a terrier. I don't
know. Yeah, well, you know, we found out that had to do with basically the software. You know, like, apparently the algorithm, or the, you know, the module, the subroutine for pointer control that came standard with the development kit for Wii was really bad. and a lot of cheap third-party games use it, and you can kind of tell because it's just it's all over the place and it never feels smooth and
oh yeah,
it just it doesn't work that well. And the funny thing is that's not the one that Nintendo used in their menus. They put like all kinds of common filtering and stuff like that on it to smooth out the motion.
Yeah.
And kind of give you the illusion that it's getting really smooth input rather than the raw input, which is really flickery and not reliable. And Nintendo just, you know, handled it way better. And some other, you know, high quality companies also kind of did a good job of it. But the really crappy company. So it's basically just a software solution. Some people had a good one, some people had a bad one.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just using averages to sort of take out vibration. It's what you would literally mm-hmm. do if you were trying to do something with like audio. Because essentially, it's the same concept, really.
Yes, it's acoustics.
You're smoothing away
structural vibrations and yeah. bridges and
I mean,
things like that.
You are quite literally.
Studied this stuff in school for engineering.
Yeah, I mean, we did it for computer science. I mean,
but you can apply it to things like pointing.
It's actually fairly easy, all things considered.
Of all
the things you could do for programming a game, that would be one of the easier things. To
I guess the point is, it is kind of a warning sign that this game is kind of cheaply made.
It's just jittering like half inch on my TV while I'm trying to hold it straight. I'm like, oh no, this is not good.
Yeah. It's really sad. What a sad way to start off the show, James.
Thanks. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Bringing up Samba de Amigo for the Wii.
You are welcome.
A very regrettable thing that exists, and I don't know why you would play that.
Because Nintendo's not putting out any games. We covered this at the start of the show.
Yeah. It's good. New business is a little thin this week, but we'll try to keep it interesting. John, what did you decide to bring for new business this week?
For new business, well, I mean...
I know you've been super busy, and we all have, really.
Yeah, but I did, I think not last weekend, but the weekend before, I did manage to do... some Destiny. I haven't played Destiny in a long time.
Yeah, we played together.
Yes. Yeah, actually, we did play together. So a friend of mine that I used to work with, I used to actually play some WoW with him, and he's disappeared. And where he disappeared to is in another time sink hole named Destiny. So, but he never told me this. I never realized this until, I see him on PSN every once in a while, but I didn't realize this, but he's playing Destiny like super hardcore now, right? Like, on the weekends, just playing, putting in a ton of hours and getting all his gear up, and he has like three different characters and this, that, and the other, right? So yeah, and actually, so me, him, and Johnny, we played a couple of weeks ago.
I was a real drag on the group.
You kind of were.
DLC.
Yeah.
I was the worst player.
You
I was the lowest level. I had been the longest since I had played it. And so I'd forgotten everything. And the game's changed a lot since I last played it. So even the rules are changing constantly. And I don't have the DLC. So even though John hadn't played the DLC, he was able to load those missions, except I was the one who was like, you know, I can't tell you how many times Destiny brought up a little thing saying, you need to buy this. Do you want to buy it? You should buy it. It's only $29.95 or whatever. And I'm like, No.
Yeah. The funniest thing for us, though, what we got the biggest kick out of with you is that you're basically sitting there complaining about grinding. And we're just like, man. Afterwards, we were just like, man, he should not even be playing this game if he doesn't like grinding.
I play Destiny. Let me be clear. I play Destiny because I like Halo.
Yeah.
So...
It's not to really me, the same. It's not. It's really not.
Well, okay, again, I don't have much experience with MMORPGs or anything like that. Not even with Diablo, quite frankly, and games like it. And so, to me, people said, well, it seemed, you know, and there was also a lot of misunderstanding about what Destiny really was like before it came out.
Whose fault was that again?
Bungie's.
I was going to go with Activision, but okay, yeah, that works too.
I'm pretty sure Bungie makes... almost all the calls in that relationship.
Ugh.
I mean, think about it. So. Bungie is a company that bought itself from another company, and Activision does not own Bungie whatsoever. They're a completely independent company. They're partnering with, they have blessed Activision with the new Bungie game, because they could have taken that to Sony or Microsoft or Nintendo or Ubisoft or whoever. So I can tell you right now who wears the pants in that partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there's any guarantee that Bungie's next game, if they ever make another game after Destiny, will be with Activision.
Yeah. Yeah, we just got a kick out of it because pretty much everything that you criticized was stuff that you pretty much have to tolerate if you're going to play that game with any regularity.
Yeah. So, I know you guys were amused because I sounded so naive. And
it wasn't even naivete.
When it comes to this kind of game,
it was just
I'm
more
very
like,
naive.
Well, I didn't look at it that way. It was just... You kind of, like, I don't know. Like, that's the thing. It's sort of like something that you kind of just accept going in, you know?
You do.
Exactly. That's the thing. Like I don't mind that.
You're getting into, and I'm just saying I didn't necessarily.
Yeah. Very true.
So for me, the beginning of it was a lot of fun going through all that stuff. But as I told you guys, and I mean this very seriously, I want to do everything once. You know, and to me, once I see everything once, I'm probably going to move on to the next game, and I'll come back to Destiny when they add a bunch of stuff that I haven't yet seen.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it doesn't look like they've really done that yet. Maybe this expansion this fall will be more along those lines. But for me, I'm like, at least another planet. To me, the game already doesn't have enough planets and locations that you can go and actually play on. So I'm looking for at least one of those units worth of geography of game to run around and explore and learn. Because I feel like the stuff that's in there, I've explored it pretty thoroughly going through the main story.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to get any more planets without buying DLC. So,
well, no, and I'm okay with that potentially, depending on, you know, if they look good and if the price is right.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah.
Playing through the same strike, which is basically like a mission from the campaign, and playing it, you know, another 15 times so I can get a new gun. Fuck that.
Yeah, that's
no interest.
Kind of.
I got other games to play, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the MMO thing.
Well, the difference being, I'm not paying for Destiny. There's no subscription, so mm-hmm. I don't feel like I owe it any commitment whatsoever.
So to
you
me,
you absolutely don't.
I can come back to it whenever I want.
Yeah.
See, to me, the description of Destiny feels more like my time with Diablo than it does with my time with MMOs.
Well, to get the most out of it, you need to put the time in, and like, for example, you have like the rep grinds, which is very common in MMOs, where you will, you know, you do a certain thing that gains you experience points with a certain faction, and once you reach a certain level with that faction, then it unlocks X.
So right? Because I always viewed it, at least from the descriptions I had, as, which I guess goes back to how good the PR messaging has been, as a loot game.
Which, yeah, I mean, it is. Absolutely.
It is that, but I guess what I've learned, it seems like, is to some extent, all MMOs are loot games.
Absolutely.
There's just also a lot of other things on top of that.
Absolutely.
So in other words, Diablo is like
a simplified
or primitive version of an MMO, basically.
Yeah.
It's the first M chopped off MMO. It's a MO.
Yeah, I mean, with Diablo, I mean, Diablo, the whole point, I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, it's kind of, the whole focus is improving your character, ultimately.
Right.
The way you do that is by gaining gear. You gain gear.
So what you're saying
mechanisms.
Is Splatoon is an MMO?
It
kind of is.
It does.
Well,
it has MMO elements.
Stuff.
I mean,
there's a massive element to it.
Well, MMO doesn't imply game type. I mean, it literally just, it's
doesn't,
a massively multiplayer online game. It's not massively right. multiplayer. It's a multiplayer online game with character advancement. It's got RPG qualities.
Exactly.
Not MMO qualities.
Character advancement. I mean, that whole thing is more RPG than it is anything massively online multiplayer. I mean,
right. Yeah. That just means you have a big open world with lots of people in it.
Correct.
Whereas Splatoon has areas that are, you know, it has game sessions. There's not a persistent world.
It has a lobby. It's soon going to have a way
But the lobby's not online.
To
the
get
lobby
together
is,
a crew to go out I mean, and play online together.
It's not
but
a massive that, world. It's like
no,
little instanced
no.
areas, so.
Yeah, the lobby's just how it's manifesting the Miiverse.
Correct.
Yeah.
I guess to me the lines are a little fuzzy.
No, they're not.
No. I mean, I'm not even an MMO guy, and they're not
like
fuzzy.
Like MMO is World of Warcraft.
Yeah, MMO,
Destiny,
MMO is
where
is
you
massive,
have these large
is,
open areas that you can explore.
I mean, to me,
open world
live.
Kind of thing.
Yeah,
lots of players in these open areas. That
it's more virtualized, whereas Miiverse is more like a message board.
Persistence
with
of the
some
world.
Interesting, you know, ways of floating things up to the top.
Me, MMO, the world exists when you're in it and when you're not in it. Like there are things happening there at all times. It's not
exactly. It's persistent.
It's not localized to this one session.
Well, but then I don't really know if Destiny qualifies.
I don't think it does. I mean,
it's all instances basically, and the lobby never shows you everyone who's playing.
It's
it shows
kinda,
you a sampling of people who are playing.
It's
including
it's,
some of your friends and
it's
including
a, little
a few
bit,
strangers. But it's kind of throwing together a gravy of
yeah.
somewhat random people who you see. Those aren't the totality of the people playing. You don't know what server
I mean,
you're on.
That sounds more like Phantasy Star. Like,
yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's kind of a hybrid. I mean, it's not full MMORPG by any stretch, but it's, you know, it's...
Right, but again, I mean, I didn't know that the parts of the MMO experience that it was going to retain was that you have to play it for 1,000 hours to really kind of get and the thing is, I feel like I got my money's worth out of Destiny, and I'm excited to have a reason to go back and play more of it sometime. I feel completely done with it, you know? And what annoys me, I guess, annoys a weird way. I feel like I'm missing out on something when people talk about, well, you know, the game doesn't even really start until you do the raid, and then you do the raid over on hard, and then you start getting your exotics, and then, you know, you break 30, and now you're doing the DLC stuff, and it's like everybody's like, well, you know, you haven't even seen Destiny. You don't even know what that game's about. And I'm like, I played it for like 25 hours.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, and that's
you don't even know what Samba de Amigo's about.
I feel like I know what Destiny's about, or I feel like I've had a Destiny experience that is valid and basically finished.
So, Johnny, you're saying your experience is what you're telling us.
Well, I mean, and that's a game design flaw. You know, what I find interesting about it, and it's one of the things that a lot of people have criticized it for, is that back in the days, back in 2004, 2005, 2006, like WoW was very much the same way, where if you could not get an organized raid up and running, you were just not going to see the end game content, period. Because there was no looking for raid tool like there is now, none of that stuff. So a lot of people that subscribe to WoW, if they weren't in an organized raiding guild, you just weren't going to see the ending of the game, period. You couldn't get into the raids, you couldn't do them, nothing. Which was stupid.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you my problem. Destiny obviously has much more advanced tools for that stuff.
They don't, though. But, that's the problem.
Well, they. I mean,
there is no look.
I guess
the thing
they
is,
benefit
the thing is,
more from the modern tools of PSN or Xbox Live or Steam.
Yeah,
you know,
but the thing is,
extent.
there's still no
it's
way.
Not Steam. It's
there
not
is
PC.
No looking for group tool that can get you automatically into a raid. You have to
okay,
manually.
So that could be better. But that's not even my problem. The reason I haven't done the raid yet, I'd like to. I'm hopefully eventually going to be able to do it, but I beat the game and then I've already played another 5 or 6 hours at least. Mm-hmm. And it looks like I'm going to have to play a whole bunch of other hours before I can even go do the raid. And I get that, you know, you need to have a certain level of equipment and experience and knowledge about the game mm-hmm. In order to really effectively do the raid. Okay, then the knowledge that you need to do it should be taught to you throughout the campaign, and the gear that you need to be able to do it should be given to you at the completion of the campaign. When I finish the game, I've seen all this content. It's time to take me into the new content that I haven't seen yet. If you're not going to do that, why is there a campaign at all?
I disagree
with
you.
Because it's not to tell an amazing story, because the story makes no fucking sense and goes nowhere.
Yeah,
so
the story
sucks.
So why
is there a campaign? The campaign is structured terribly. There's a lot of great content. It's a fun shooter. But, like, the pacing of it and the guidance of it and, like, it actually being focused on getting you somewhere or building you up to be a certain level of player so you can go on and do the big multiplayer cool online stuff after that. It completely fails. It doesn't even explain how to do any of this shit.
Well,
it doesn't even try to transition you into a post in-game content kind of player.
Well, the thing is, that's where it gets into your other complaint, where you have to do the content over and over to get the prerequisite drops or do rep grinds to get.
Yeah, that just seems completely pointless to me. Take out the grind.
Yeah. And
now
that's
it's
the thing.
A better game.
A lot of people don't mind that at all. I mean, I don't really mind it. It really all comes down to what kind of commitment you want to make to the game. Now, I will say that I did the Vault of Glass raid.
You're beginning to doubt my commitment to Sparkle Motion.
That's the whole thing, though. That's why it's like that's why we kind of chuckled, because the stuff that you were saying is if you play MMOs and that's kind of your thing, or if you play Diablo, the grinding is just part of it. You know what I mean? Like, you don't really mind it. Yeah. Like, you just. It's just part of it. Like, you just tolerate it like you would in other types of games where you know it's dumb shit. And like in RPGs, you tolerate stupid stuff. You tolerate random battles.
You're used to it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, just because you're used to it, don't make it right.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you just said... You just said
tradition doesn't equal justice.
But that's the thing, though. You just said on a recent podcast that you don't mind random battles because you've grown up playing RPGs that have random battles.
It's true, but
other people might come in and say, fuck this game because its random battles are idiotic.
Right, and I said that about Earthbound Beginnings, and I'll stand by that statement, but I'll also say the context of that was, I think everybody who loves Japanese RPGs and continues to play and enjoy the old ones would tell you that they would prefer that there weren't random battles.
I think
it's a shitty old relic of, you know, the inability to draw enough graphics on the screen so that you could see when the enemies are coming. I think the element of surprise is basically only a negative to the experience of playing those kinds of games. And I'd be glad if I never played another game with completely random invisible encounters again. But I can tolerate it. If you, as someone who's not used to that stuff, has never played this kind of game, comes to me and says, hey, I have this problem with this game, I don't seem to be able to enjoy it, I'd say, I understand. It's a shitty thing. So, but I hope you could look at the other aspects of the game and get over
it. I am in no way defending the rep grinds. Absolutely not.
So I will say one thing. That there are people out there who enjoy just mindlessly is not the word I'm going for, enjoy just sort of the repetition of just going through and grinding stuff.
Mindlessly is part of it. I've been there. I've enjoyed that, and then I decided
it makes me think a little bit of an editorial that James Charlton wrote for the site, like 2010. The Japanese Dragon Quest for Perfection. I don't know why I remember the title. Where he talked about how there's this thing in Japanese games about grinding and advancing characters and progressing, and it's a little bit culturally endemic, not just because of that's what the game culture developed, because there's a certain personal quest of sort of polishing yourself to perfection that's also in play there. So there's
honing, self-improvement, increased efficiency, being the best person you can, living the longest life, being the healthiest.
Right. And so
part of their culture.
To a certain extent, that there are people who have that same mentality outside of Japan, obviously, and it may very well permeate the kinds of games they like. They like that I'm going to hit this really hard, I'm going to see some incremental improvement, and as long as I keep seeing some degree of improvement, I feel good about it.
Yeah. And I do think it is I think it's a very similar phenomenon that's being designed into games like Diablo and now MMORPGs and Destiny, whichever one it is. I think it is the same strain of psychology. I just feel like these Western games are way more extreme about it.
So I think, you know, I think
they demand a level of commitment to the game that I feel like most Japanese games don't, at least not the ones I grew up and fell in love with.
It really depends. I mean, with Japanese MMORPGs, not so much Japanese ones, but Korean ones especially.
Are
brutally grindy.
Oh my God, they're grindy.
Yeah, they're brutal. Like, they're notorious
for it. But they're also very, very, very freemium based.
Yeah.
So, you know,
Korea is like an internet addicted country.
So they
way
use,
more than even America,
so they use
especially
the,
way more than
they
Japan.
Use the cash shop to monetize, which means being grindy is a monetary policy. They're trying to get you to buy gear to sort of short circuit this incredible grind machine they've put in front of you to accomplish anything.
So I don't like that being in my $60 video game.
Well, and in that case, those games are usually free. It's all the cash shops how they make all the money.
Right.
So if you want
Destiny is not free.
If you want to
keep playing it, you have to keep buying it every time they put out more of it.
Yeah.
And so I
that bothers me more than anything is that
it is a lot of, I know they're putting a lot of work into it, but there's to me you don't get that much for your money. You know, I kind of feel that way about the first Destiny. Not as strongly as some people do. I think it's a bit lean on content. I don't think it's serious a problem with it, but the DLC stuff looks really off base to me. The ratio of just how much content is actually there, to the point that I would never really consider buying it. I feel like I don't get enough satisfaction out of what they have there.
Yeah.
Obviously,
Your
friend does, and I think you might too, John, if you keep playing it, if you get re-addicted to it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I'm not addicted to it by any stretch, but I mean, I enjoy the gameplay. It's like I don't really take it very seriously. But the one thing one thing before we started kind of digressing, but I just wanted to talk about the raid, because this was the first time I'd ever been able to do a raid, because...
Oh, you did it?
Yeah, I did. I did Vault of Glass. It's the first raid. I think it's the raid from the first expansion.
No, it's from the beginning. You don't have to buy it. I could do it.
Level. Okay. So, yeah. So
hence my frustration, John.
Yes, it's the launch raid. So I did that, and it's actually really good. It was interesting. Of course, like I said about the whole gating stuff, is really unless you can get six of your friends, you know, real people, which is tough to play it through with you, you're not going to do it. So because there's no looking for a group. Tool, like you can't just like jump into like a random party with random people. Not that you would necessarily, not that that's the ideal way to play it, but you could still do it. I mean, if you knew the raid and everybody just kind of knew what they were going to do, you could still do it. But it's actually really fun. I mean, it is complete MMO style. You know, you know, you come up to a boss and, you know, you have the one person that leads the raid who says, okay, you two guys go over there and you fight these guys. You guys go over here. You guys go over there. Okay, when that enemy comes out, this guy, you kill him. Then this guy over here shoots that thing. I mean, it's all that coordinated kind of stuff. And it's really, really cool seeing that in a first-person shooter format. They've actually they did a very good job. I don't think all of the raids are as good as Vault of Glass, but they did a good job with the Vault of Glass raid. So it was fun.
So somebody was telling me that the thing about the raids are there's definitely a strategy that you have to figure out.
Yep.
But that once you figure it out, they kind of lose a lot because then it becomes it becomes sort of repetition. It's the challenge is really figuring out the puzzle that is how do you break down this raid. And the problem is they get solved, and then that becomes sort of widely dispersed by people who jump from one raid to another. And
But at that point, see, like you're at that point, once you get it down, you're farming it for gear.
Right.
That lets you progress into the next raid.
It just feels like, man, it would be so much better if the game just had so many raids that it would be hard to just get to that point where you could just grind one. Like, you just know this raid cold and it's not a threat anymore.
Well, the thing is, the problem with that is that it would undermine your mastery of the raid. The whole point is, like, you know, becoming so good at it that you can do it really easily. Like, that's kind of what you're striving for.
Sure.
And then you move on to the next raid that's harder.
But I'm saying for people like Johnny, that would be what would be more appealing to him, is if the progress was...
Like speedrunning it? I don't think so.
No. If the progress was more... You're now strong enough to clear this raid. You're ready to go to the next one. Not you've mastered all the strats for this one raid. Like, you've done it a bunch of times. You've perfected how you play it. Like, that's the breakdown here, is that in a more traditional...
For me, it's about getting to the next thing.
Right. In a more traditional RPG, that's the goal. Get good enough to get just eke out a victory here. But in this kind of game, it's much more about not getting... Like, that's the bare minimum. You've now entered that raid if you can beat it. It's a matter of mastering that raid, so it's not a challenge anymore.
Yeah. You're exploring every single nook and cranny of a relatively small game
and playing things
over and over again to master them.
You're building the script.
And you're happy
for that
doing
raid.
That, and I'm not. And that's all. But Destiny is a good game. We've talked about it a lot here, but I mean, it's been a while since we talked about it or even played it. So I think it was an interesting game for me to check in on. It's like a lot of times. Something like this, like FF14, I can't willy-nilly go check in on it. I'd have to cough up, you know, $15 or whatever for a month to get back into it and even see how it's changed and try to remember what the hell I was doing last time. But with Destiny, it's free, so I can just connect anytime. It's on my PS4 hard drive. All I have to do is go over to it in a menu and be like, oh, I wonder what Destiny's like nowadays. It's like, well, okay, it's still much the same, but it's a good game. Anyway, that's enough of Destiny. I'll bring us back into Nintendo land a bit here and talk a bit more about Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate. Because obviously I was traveling last weekend and that's why I missed the show. And I didn't have a ton of time to play 3DS. I was out at a music festival. Not so much a hippie festival like you guys used to make fun of me for, but it was the Newport Folk Festival. It was a very... very beautiful place and lots of wonderful music and good friends. And it was a wonderful vacation, but I did play some 3DS on the way there and on the way back. And I played Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate, and I gotta say, it's picking up the pace a little bit. I was stuck for a little while because I had done all the quests from the counter, like all the level 1 and level 2 stuff, and they were telling me about expeditions, but when I opened up the map, I went to the wrong thing. I went to this other city where there's really nothing to do, and there's no quest there for you to do. Mm-hmm. And so when that didn't pan out, I went back to the first town. I'm like, okay, now I have no idea where to go next. It turned out there was another icon on the map that I needed to click on, and that took me to this expedition that has a lot of extra rules. Like, every time I open up a new part of the game, there's a lot that they have to tell me about it because it's a big, complicated game. And the expedition has some different stuff, but I like that it's kind of more like the open world map of Monster Hunter, you know, to like kind of use a Final Fantasy comparison. It's a bit like that in that it is partially random generated, which I don't like much. I didn't realize that there was this much dungeon crawling in Monster Hunter.
Well, there is. But, I mean, that's new in 4. So.
Oh, that's brand new for 4?
Yeah. That was not in 3.
Okay.
Like the whole concept was not in Monster Hunter 3.
I, I would love if this was like, if you were actually going out on handcrafted, you know, individual things. But they're very clearly randomly generated from just a chunk of, you know, a pile of pieces of stage. And you can basically use it to level up. You can go and hunt more monsters. You don't have to be on a quest to go out there and make it worth your while. You might run into a wild monster that you weren't intending to find, and you can kill it, and you get like a lot of credit for that. You get a lot of money and experience, and it opens up new quests for you that are important, like important story quests even. And you can go and harvest better materials out there. You can kill a lot of lesser monsters you might have seen before and kind of harvest a lot of their stuff. And do all that outside of the strict confines of a quest where you have very, very specific, clear objectives and a time limit. And, you know, once you get the thing you need, it's going to automatically take you back to the village. This is much more free roaming.
Yeah.
I guess I wish it was actually kind of more of an open, big, fun area to explore rather than a series of boring tunnels, because that would kind of go along with the feeling that now the game is kind of blossomed up a little bit and I can kind of go out and do my own thing and play it my style.
Well, now in Monster Hunter 3, you could do free hunting, but you would just be going back into the same areas that you're using
the
same for
places.
Normal quests.
Yeah.
Yep. So.
Right. Yeah. So it's been interesting. Also opened up a guild quest for the first time. This is getting a little arcane. I hope I don't lose people who've never played Monster Hunter, or the people who are so advanced that they think all this is boring. But again, I'm very naive about this series, so this is all new to me. I've never gotten this far. I never got this far when I played 3 on the Wii. So I opened up guild quests, and again, tons of explanations, lots and lots of dialogue boxes telling me about menu selections and stuff like that, and like all the different kinds of quests, and some are more important than others, and some you can't do, some you can street pass, and some you can't, and I don't. It's a bit overwhelming, honestly, to be on a plane and trying to read this stuff. But I gathered that the guild hall has a lot of the same functions as out in the town. So I'm not real clear on why there's like two item shops, you know, and it seemed like they duplicated a lot of features, and it has a whole separate quest counter. And I guess I might prefer that they were just all in one list. I could just go to one place and get all the quests and didn't have to worry so much about the different requirements for all of them. One quest I tried to do, and this is actually an important story quest, and it wouldn't let me because I couldn't pay the fee. Because for some reason you have to pay money to take quests. Meanwhile, by the way, taking quests is playing Monster Hunter. If you're not taking quests, you're not playing Monster Hunter. There's nothing to do if you don't go on a quest. So I really can't imagine why they would make me pay fees to go out and kill things for people who are afraid of monsters outside the village. Why would I have to pay a fee?
Don't you have to pay fees for every quest?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Why would they make me pay to go? I was turned down on doing what's called an urgent quest, which is like an important story quest that will unlock lots of other features and more monsters and more characters and things. Let me go to a new town. So it's a very big deal. And I couldn't do it because I had just spent a bunch of money upgrading armor, which I'm pretty sure you're supposed to do. You know, and so they went over, okay, I just upgraded my armor, I ate a big meal, I'm all ready to go. They won't let me go on the quest because now I'm broke? Why do you care? I'm ready to go kill the thing that you want me to kill. Why do I have to pay you to do that? I had to go sell a bunch of random items out of my box to fund this expedition. And I just thought, this is some dumb shit. This is exactly the kind of thing that like makes the series scary to people like me. And I'm like, why should I have to deal with this shit?
Reason why they do that
it's a fun game. I want to play it. Let me play it. Don't make me go through 10 more menus so I can play it.
I mean, the reason why they do that is to give you some, is to actually, so that you won't just like quit the quest, because it's a penalty for you quitting or failing it.
I don't want to quit the quest.
It's a security deposit. You've got to
do the quest.
Look, it's a security deposit to make sure you don't wreck shit while you're doing construction. God, haven't you ever been a contractor before? Come on.
Oh, man. There's some weird decisions in this game. But it is fun, and it is clicking more. I do still think – I mean, I think it's really fun when you run into a new monster, and it's like, I just killed a flying dragon.
Yeah.
And it flew around, and it shot fire, and it charged at me on the ground, and it was really – it was hard. It took me a long time to kill it, and it was fun to do, and I cheered when I finally killed it. I was just playing by myself, but it took me a good 20 or 30 minutes on the plane to kill this thing, and I was kind of getting exhausted by the end of it.
Yep.
But I did it, And I got a bunch of parts, and it looks like the armor is going to be really cool when I can make it. And you know, that's the fun part of Monster Hunter. That's what I want more of. I want to get to that stuff a little bit easier. That's why, you know, the more I hear about the Monster Hunter Cross or Monster Hunter X, the more action-y version that's coming out in Japan, I think at the end of this year, that might be a little more up my alley. But the, you know, I think I'm starting to kind of understand why people like it.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to like it more myself. So that's good.
That's the thing though. Like it does feel like a long haul. Yeah. But I mean, the thing is, it does get to a point where you have so much money and everything, and not far into the game either, where you just have so much money, you just don't even have to like worry about that stuff anymore.
Like, people keep telling me that about Splatoon, but every time I play it, I think, man, it takes too long to level up and I don't have enough money to buy the guns.
You should get better.
So I don't know.
You just need to get good.
I think I just need to get more time on these games. And
yeah.
These games aren't fitting into my lifestyle this summer, it feels like. Anyway. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, with Monster Hunter, I mean, that's the thing. You do start, the thing is, the low-level quests don't really give you a whole lot in terms of, like, Zenny or whatever it is, and, but you do start getting quests that give you a large payout, and you also start learning how to do some of the kind of optional stuff in quests to give you even more money, like, you know, against certain enemies, if you chop off their tail, you get extra stuff, you know, and you can also bring along your feline kind of companions, and they'll dig stuff up for you and which you can sell or whatever.
Is chopping off their tail something that can happen just in the middle of the battle?
Yeah. Like for the,
I haven't seen anything like that. I that's interesting. There's because
I mean, it varies, like whatever it is, it varies by the monster, but there is always an optional thing that you can do to the monster to get extra payouts.
It's almost like Mega Man X. Like if you use the thing that they're weak against, you get a different animation. It's funny to hear you say that, because that sounds like in practice that should be like a very dynamic thing where it's like you hit the monster in just the right place and bam, you chop off his tail and it does a ton of damage. Now he's seriously wounded and you have this prize. But when you're actually playing Monster Hunter, it's all based on these canned animations that are sometimes long and extravagant, you know. And so it's weird to think of myself doing one of these attacks where I hit this guy. I mean, I've hit this monster in the tail a million times. Mm-hmm. His tail is never coming off, right?
It will.
Because that's just not cooked in. Well, no. I mean, this particular monster doesn't lose his tail. That's my point.
Exactly. I mean, it's different for every monster. But that's part of the fun, right? You have to know what the monster is weak to, and you have to know what the optional things are. For example, the Tetsukabra that I talk so much about, that it has really mm-hmm. cool armor and all that kind of stuff.
I'm hoping to get to that one soon.
Yeah, but I mean, but for example, for him, he has two big tusks, and if you knock off one tusk, you get X amount of money and X amount of whatever. If you knock them both off, you get the full amount of money. They're like subquests, you know?
So it doesn't matter if
you do it, but if you manage to do it, it's kind of like, it's almost like you can kill a monster, but then you can also kill him with style.
It's a bonus. So, yeah, John, it's cool. It's very Japanese.
Are you
telling
me that Tigrex nails are used as fertility drugs in the Monster Hunter World Chinese equivalent of a drugstore that we're doing here?
Absolutely. All right,
so if you use Tetsukabra tails, you will have a boner.
You absolutely will.
Congratulations.
You know,
Chinese traditional medicine shows up in Monster Hunter 4.
I mean, I would keep a doctor on hand, but definitely
herbal doctor, obviously.
You will have a full erection if you
a
get...
traditional medicine doctor. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. You just, the cook will prepare it for you. You just give him the gourmet voucher and mm-hmm. he cooks that up, and that way you have the extra stamina and extra health when you go into battle.
Yep.
For your next big
or when you go into
your next big expedition.
Battle.
Yeah.
Ladies.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's enough Monster Hunter. I'm sure I'll check in with it again at some point. But I guess I can also briefly mention I played a little bit of Ori and the Blind Forest. I haven't gotten very deep into it. Most of the stuff I've done, I've actually done before at your house, John, when you were showing it to me and you let me play some of it on your Xbox One. So, yeah, I got an Xbox One. So that's weird.
Welcome to the next level, buddy.
Yeah. I've spent very little time with it. I got the Master Chief Collection bundle, which is just a digital code, which I'm totally fine with. And so I downloaded that. The first night was just downloading things. I didn't actually play anything on it because the Master Chief Collection is gigantic. It's like it's like five games. I bought the ODST thing because it's only $5, and maybe one day I'll get time to play that. And I got Ori. That was really the first game I wanted to play because you had recommended it so highly, John.
Yeah.
And I've only played it for like maybe an hour, so I'm not deep into it. But, you know, it is very Metroid-y in the format of it, for sure. I like the feel of it. It has a particular feel. It's a little bit – it feels a little like Super Meat Boy, I would say. You have like a small squat character who's like very slick, and pretty early in the game you get the ability to kind of cling onto walls and jump up them, and that feels very Meat Boy-ish. You know, there's a little bit of combat so far, and it's hard. It's surprisingly hard. I bet it will get easier as it goes because of the Metroid upgrade type stuff going on in it. But in the beginning, I feel like it's a pretty tough game. I've died a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the feeling of difficulty is probably compounded in the early days by the confusion of how the checkpoint system works, because you basically can set your own checkpoint whenever you want, except it takes a lot of energy. So sometimes you won't be able to. But sometimes you kind of have that in the bag and you're like, when I feel safe, when I feel like I've got found a good spot, I can make a little campfire here. And that'll become my new save. I'll save my game, and that'll be my checkpoint if I die. But there's a little bit of like, I don't want to use it too early. That might be wasteful, or maybe I want to put it right after this hard part so I won't have to do that ever again.
Mm-hmm.
And that adds a layer of like kind of thinking about the file system effectively of the game that I don't know if I like that. It's weird because it's almost like an old PC game kind of deal where you could kind of save anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you're constantly thinking about when should I save? When should I save? I don't want to make 1,000 saves, but I want to make a good save. I want it to matter. I want to save at a good point where if I need to quit suddenly, I'll be okay if I go back there. I'll know what I'm doing. I won't be almost dead, et cetera, et cetera. And you're kind of doing that here in Ori and the Blind Forest. It's a weird element to bring into this game that I don't really think it needed. Some people will probably love it because it's very old school. I don't think I'm a fan of it, but I also get the feeling that it'll become less and less important as the game goes forward.
Yeah, I mean, by the end of the game, you have so many save states that you don't even have to worry about it.
Yeah, there
like,
you go.
I mean, you have probably 5 that you can use at any one time, and
you
really never run
right
out of
them. Because right now, it's a big deal when I make one.
Yeah, by the end of the game, you don't even have to worry about it.
Yeah, that's what I figured. So it's just, it starts off really hard. But it's beautiful, and it controls well, and I'm excited to get further into it. I guess all I would say about the Xbox One is it was easy to set up. I think the on-screen keyboard is way worse than Sony's on the PS4. It's about as good as the PS3 keyboard, which is to say really bad. But I didn't have to use it that much, and it was overall very easy to set up, very slick presentation of the whole installation, setup, download thing. It downloaded the newest firmware before it even did anything else, which I thought was pretty slick, because that's really what you would want. And it was very smooth, and it didn't ask me, it didn't make me accept 1,000 terms and conditions or anything. It was more of a console experience than a computer experience, which I was happy about. And the store I think is pretty decent. I think, you have a little more control over what you're looking at, than you do on the PS4. So I'm pretty happy with it so far. It's probably going to be my least used of the three systems, but I'm now a full generation console owner, which is scary, but I've made a life decision. I've made 3 life decisions to live with these consoles and, support them. Try to give them all at least enough attention, if not the same amount of attention. But I'm expecting to not buy that many Xbox games, but I want it for certain things, which I think you're probably like that, John.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. There's certain things I will buy for it, and just certain stuff I will buy on Sony's.
Yeah. And console. That's how I was about the PS3 last generation, because I eventually had all of those as well, because I have this sickness of being an adult video gamer with the means to own the systems, even though I don't have the good judgment to not do it. So here I am, and there's my Xbox One. And of course, I'm going to be getting Rare Replay. I mean, I played that. I haven't really talked about it a lot, but TYP and I played a good hour of it, I think, at Microsoft's booth at E3. It felt like we tried a lot of different things. We played a hell of RC Pro-Am 2, which I'd never played before. I was super excited to check that out.
That's super
it's
fun.
It's an NES game. I was very impressed by Rare Replay from what I saw. There were a lot of, you know, like most of the N64 games weren't available. GeForce Gemini, Blast Corps, you couldn't play. Some of the 360 stuff early, like Cameo, wasn't there. So I don't know how all that stuff is represented, but the stuff we did play was really impressive and really fun. And those games hold up, and they're funny and goofy and exciting and smart. And I'm really excited to play a bunch of Rare shit on my Xbox. And I'm really looking forward to that. It feels like a long time since I really stewed in the awesomeness of Rare and how good they used to be.
I do wonder if those games that got 360 ports and the 360 originals are actually just going to be like keys to download backwards compatible versions of that game.
I think they basically are. Yeah.
So,
which is fine.
Yeah. Which
that's perfectly fine, because the backwards compatible stuff seems to work really well.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, it's been a weird set of new business from the three of us, but there it is. We hope you enjoyed it. We're now going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some recent news, all Nintendo related, I promise. And we'll see. We'll kind of see where the conversation takes us in this episode of RFN. So we'll be right back.
It's now playing. A sampling of the best new original content at NintendoWorldReport.com.
Oh, first up this week, we have a preview. Star Fox Zero on Wii U by Carmine Red. In a revealing piece, Carmine implies that he has experience flying attack helicopters. How else would he know about their aiming systems? Perhaps you let a little bit too much slip in this preview, huh, Carmine? Watch out for the Men in Black. Anyways, he makes a case for the gamepad being useful, so there you go.
See, I'm saying he has access to government secrets, perhaps in a weapons testing program.
Maybe he's a government secret.
So perhaps the whole thing is, his whole kind of like Kirby-loving thing is a whole facade.
Yeah, maybe Carmine M. Red is his code name.
I've always been skeptical.
We're all going to get killed now, John. Yeah. Everyone, if you listen to the show, you're not going to make it to the special announcement at the end of the episode because the government's going to hunt you down. Mm. I'm sorry.
You've already said too much.
All right, but in a review that you won't get a chance to read, we have a review! Aventurine Odyssey 2, Untold, The Fafnir Knight.
Fafnir, man.
The Fafnir Knight. I'll call whatever I want because you're not going to get
Fun
to hear
Fun Fear is what you have of Zach Miller.
The Funfair Knight on 3DS by Zach Miller. Join Zach as he plows through the dungeons. Why don't you just go ahead, John?
Dungeons of Yggdrasil and Ganungagap, and hopefully the Cunnilingus DLC is coming soon. Continue, James.
Well, no one's going to hear it, so that's fine. Also, watch as he praises the inclusion of dinosaurs, and obviously docks a point for the lack of boobs. Hey, it's a Zach Miller joint.
Indeed.
Jesus, John.
All right, we have a preview of Fire Emblem If for 3DS by Carmine Red again. Carmine decides to get adopted by the Hoshido family, and honestly, it's probably for the best. Now he can finally make his own castle and hoard Dragon Bane points. Don't worry, there's plenty of Dragon Bane points out there. See, you get them by... I forget it. Enjoy his hands-on preview instead.
Dragon Bane points and DLC chapter... I don't write these.
There's a theme here, people. It's called Undercurrents. We have a feature.
Pretty overt.
All right, we have a feature on the Lost Kirby Games by Neil Ronahan. Neil examines the strange case of Shinichi Shimomura and what among Kirby fans is known as the Dark Matter Trilogy. Find out what makes these games unique, and even more interestingly, find out how little we know about the life and death of Shimomura-san. Huh? Hey, can you see it? Men in Black. You know, the whole thing. It's kind of sneaky.
How do you tie in that monstrosity in the second hit?
It's, you know, it's, Sex, drugs, rock and roll, baby. I don't know what to tell you.
All this and more sex, drugs, and rock and roll is available to you right now at NintendoWorldReport.com.
Ganunga Gap.
Welcome back, everybody. We're not doing listener mail this week. Instead, I thought we would do a little bit of a news roundup. There's just some tidbits and little fun little topics that have been popping up lately that haven't been talked about already on the show. And I thought, well, let's go through a few of them and see what sparks a conversation and what doesn't. One thing I think we could talk about that's actually happening as we record is that the Smash Brothers update is going up. And the Splatoon update will be going up very, very soon after you hear this episode, August 6th, I guess a few days later. But these are both, you know, both games getting fairly major updates, Splatoon especially. But Smash Brothers adding a tournament mode, as well as some new Mii costumes, Mii Fighter. We are already hosting an NWR tournament. I'm sure there will be more and they'll be ongoing. So if you want to play some Smash Brothers with us and with other people, keep an eye on our Twitter accounts and on our homepage, and you'll find the details there. But I don't know. What do you guys think? Is this a significant update to the game? I mean, this was promised in that, you know, that direct before it even came out last year.
Yeah, I mean, tournament mode is pretty sweet.
It's kind of amazing. It's kind of amazing to me how long it took. But yeah, it's good that it's there.
Yeah, I agree. It did feel like the post-release content was a bit more than they, you know, I feel like they bit off more than they could chew. and it's taken a long time to get out some of these things that, you know, tournament mode was in Brawl from day one, I think. Mm-hmm. Not really, maybe you could do it online, maybe not. I'm not sure. But, you know, the online mode was pretty broken anyway. But at least the feature was there. In theory, it worked. So I thought it was, this seems like a pretty rudimentary thing, but I don't know the details of how it's implemented.
Yeah, I mean, testing it online would be a bitch, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, and the tricky part with doing a tournament is how do you, you know, people all join. How do you, you know, keep them all engaged throughout a tournament if it's real time? Or do you try to make it like
asynchronous?
Yeah.
Then do you have to get into like system level notifications of, hey, yeah, your tournament match is coming up. I doubt they're doing that. It'd be nice. But I get that there's some logistical stuff with a tournament when you can have that many players. But it'll be interesting. I mean, obviously, we did a tournament on our website staff without this mode. It was a huge hassle. And there are some, we had to do some things that we won't have to do next time. I think there will be a next time. And I'm looking forward to that. So the tournament mode is very welcome, certainly among our group. I think extremely welcome because we're actually going to use it. I don't know that most people will, but I think for a few of us, we'll probably get a lot of mileage out of it. And I'm looking forward to trying it. I don't think they announced any new characters for this update, but there will be more on the way, of course. We still don't know the results of that poll, you know, the whole write-in.
Well, they said it was going to run through the year, didn't they?
I don't know if it was through the end of the calendar year, or just maybe until the end of August or September or something like that. But it was a pretty long window for sure. I don't know. Did you guys actually put in any names?
I did.
I'm pretty sure I put in Ray, of course, from Death.
Yeah. I mean, you should put in Ray. I mean,
I absolutely did. I'm damn serious about it.
There's no reason to not put in Ray. I mean,
you know, the developers of Disaster Day of Crisis have a credit on Super Smash Bros.
They have a credit on every Nintendo game. I mean, because there's so much middleware they've contributed to Wii U development.
And there's a few characters and stages based on Xenoblade as well.
Yeah, the poll's still up, so.
Oh, Ray,
deadline
so much.
For entry is 10/3.
October 3rd.
Yeah, I'm
for our European listeners.
It's 10/3.
That is a point of some contention, sir.
It is 10/3.
Yes, 2015.
To remember who I put in for. Oh, actually, let's see if it's still in the buffer memory here.
I never did bother. I just figured it's a memory hole, you know.
Yeah,
it's just I cannot imagine that my one vote will have even the slightest influence on their decision. So
I put in something that was eminently predictable for me putting in. I just can't remember what it was.
I know I considered actually going through the trouble to put in Waluigi because I thought there might be enough people doing it. But then I heard that some of the fine print said, you know, if a character is already in the game as a trophy or something like that, then we're not going to do it. And of course, Waluigi is a very lame and disappointing assist trophy in this game. So
yeah, it's
I guess he's hopeless. And that kind of turned me off of the whole process because I thought, well, I mean, there's a lot of good characters who are trophies. That really shouldn't prevent them, I don't think. But
it would be be cool if, you know, there was something, you know, that there was a better way of representing Waluigi. I think Nintendo should probably consider doing
a stage.
Know, Doing, yeah.
You can
doing,
take a mustache ride on Waluigi's stage.
I didn't say that.
in Smash Brothers.
Like, I actually really like his Mario Kart DS stage. So, you know, depicting him some way like that. You know, that was a fun, stupid stage that felt appropriate for that kind of an asshole of a character.
Yeah, I agree. That'd be fun. So, anyway, Super Smash Brothers update. Now, Splatoon will be a more substantial update. Well, obviously, we're getting friend battles. That's only for ranked play, I believe, and not for for the main turf wars. So I still need to unlock ranked play if I'm going to get to use that feature next week. I think I can do it in time, and I'm looking forward to that. I'll be interested to see how that's all implemented, how easy it is to do. But I think that would be fun. I wish they were adding voice chat. At least specifically for that mode would seem perfect for it if you were going to try to cut it off for everything else. But maybe one day we'll see. I'll be on voice chat with you guys when we check it out. There's going to be new levels, new weapons, a bunch of new shirts and stuff, which is all fine and dandy. Still no word on new single player content. But I think that you had mentioned this, James, a while back, a few weeks ago, but I think when they do get around to doing some kind of paid DLC for Splatoon, the campaign makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, because you can give those people something in the multiplayer, but not split the player base. And that was kind of what I was thinking, like, well, what if they just made a bunch of characters where they just flipped it, and now you're playing the Octolings, and then you can play as them in the multiplayer. Because it's visually distinct, but they still play the same way. Mm, so people who don't have it would instantly see it and go, oh man, I want to do that.
You could maybe do that, but that's pretty cosmetic. I don't know how many people would be really...
Well, no, I mean, the main selling
point...
That'd
be like a microtransaction, not a big expansion.
The main selling point would be the multiplayer play. I mean, that's what would be the new single-player chapters. Like, that's that's the advertising thing for people who don't have it. Like, no, look...
Yeah, you get a bonus for the multi. But yeah, I do think that for the multiplayer, I think Nintendo really wants everyone to be on equal footing, have access to the same items, the same levels.
Right.
I think that makes a lot of sense. They're already gating it off with the level requirement for ranked play, but that's a one-time deal. And, you know, once you get up to that level, you can play that stuff. And then you're, you know, being at a higher level really doesn't matter. It gives you access to more weapons, but they're mostly variants on the lower level weapons. So they're not necessarily strictly better in most cases.
I mean, so early on, you obviously gain access to more classes of weapons. But I'm at the point now where I pretty much have all the classes of weapons and... Now it's just when they start giving us weird weapons, like the bucket,
I haven't seen the bucket.
Yeah, it was in a trailer they released. It's a bucket, and you just throw a bucket to ink at people. Like, so you're just running around with a metal bucket, and you just sort of, like, bucket brigade toss, except it's full of ink.
Yeah. I mean, at this time, you're pretty much, you know, you have kind of your favorite gun that you're comfortable with, and you're probably kind of rolling with that, and... Trying other stuff out, but
I do like that the new stuff is where they're getting weird with it, like the Gatling gun. It looks
that's exciting.
Big dumb Nerf Gatling gun that shoots ink and a bucket. It's like the paintbrush is fairly recent, all things considered. Like it's nice to bring in the weirder stuff as you go because that even if you settled in, you're like, no, this is my thing. Like, okay, I need to see what it's like to play with the bucket.
Yeah, I'm sure a million other people have made this comparison, but. I think especially with, you know, you started to see this with the rollers once those were announced and they really showed them off and explained their utility in the battle and people started thinking about it. You realize this is almost another class, right? And now with some of the, you know, you've got the sniper rifles, which are pretty hard to use, but in the right hands can be very powerful, you know, for certain aspects of the battle. You wouldn't want a team of all snipers in Turf Wars, but maybe one person who's good at it is useful to have. And it starts to feel more like Team Fortress 2 to me, where it feels like there are several different kinds of characters you can play as depending on which weapon you choose, and they're all pretty different and they have different roles. Some are more support, some are more direct strike, it's, you know, some are not healing but maybe just kind of watching out for other people and supporting other people, or just covering the base and being non-confrontational. Like, it's exciting to see that much diversity of play style, and that the game is continuing to add more of those, to me is a really good sign. It keeps the game very interesting down the road.
I will say, what's, you know, they had their financial announcement earlier this week, and that game's now sold 1.62 million units.
Pretty good.
On a console, it just crossed 10 million unit mark, which means like 16%
brand new franchise.
16% of the people who own Wii U's own this game.
Yeah, it's like, was the one tweet I saw where it was it said that it sold more copies than any PS4 game in Japan.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, totally.
So what does that tell you? I mean,
it's been
once
quite
again,
popular in Japan.
Yeah, it's
and
like
everywhere.
Nintendo knows Japan.
But here's the thing: less than half the sales are in Japan. I mean, granted, it's a small country, but like,
yeah, but it's doing well in North America and Europe as well. And the thing is, James, I think Nintendo also sees this as a game that they can continue to sell if play it right. They can do way better than 16% of the user base, because the people who already own Wii U's are probably the types of people who are convincible by word of mouth from the other people who own Wii U's and are saying, yo, this game's really good, you should try it.
And it is still selling. I mean, it's still selling. Yeah. It's still pulling down good numbers in the territories it's selling in. So, I mean, they've done a admirable job with this game in a lot of ways, both business and you know, actual game design stuff.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's going to have legs.
I think this slow trickle has been good for keeping that game in conversations, because like they didn't.
It's tailor made for our podcast, because we need something to talk about every week, and there's almost something almost every week for Splatoon. Yep.
So the bucket and Gatling gun, they didn't announce it. They put out a trailer just showing a bunch of stuff, and it was just flashed in there as part of the B-reel. Like, they know what they're doing. They know how dumb that bucket looked, and they knew that even though that video was only released in Japan initially, it was going to spread through the internet. So now people are waiting for the bucket to come out. It's just, it's a very kind of almost marketing by viralness game, although they definitely did a big ad buy on it too.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure the fact that, you know, they knew the summer would be kind of light on games.
Yeah.
I'm sure it had a lot to do with it, with their approach.
Well, yeah, it is the Wii U game for the summer.
Well, and actually, I know we've already talked about the Smash stuff, but it kind of feeds back into it. You know, they announced some more DLC costumes, which they've been doing periodically. And they just keep upping the gun on how ridiculous these DLC costumes are, and we talk about it. Like, they had the King K. Rool costume, which is this full-body suit where your head...
It's amazing.
Your head's just poke... Your face just pokes out of his jaw. It's...
It's so funny.
It's the most... Like, people... That was one of the characters people have been asking for. But they... And how they give it to you instead is this... terrible slash amazing costume.
I kind of want it. I don't play as the Mii fighter very much because it doesn't come up in random, which is usually what I select, but that I might go
that,
through the trouble
that costume
if
is
I
so
could be K. Rool.
I mean, if you think back to what the Mega Man costumes were, I remember thinking, oh, these are pretty cool, but now like
those were cool actually.
You've had like Heihachi, which with the hair just looks ridiculous and blows how those Mega Man ones look out of the water, and now you've got this, and then you've got like the Lloyd Irving from Tales of Symphonia, who just
looks weird. Yeah,
it's literally just. I mean, it's literally just they've gone to their partners who have characters in this game and said, "We want to make ridiculous costumes. We'll give you a cut. What's your idea?"
Yeah, it's a very low bar of entry because they don't have. The moves, it makes sense with the Mii characters, right? Because the animations are already there,
right?
So they don't have to go through a ton of trouble to, like, you know, that's why the new characters are actually really difficult to make, because the animations are so complicated and the timing, and they have to rebalance the game every time they add that stuff. Now they can just make art, and they can make the craziest art you can imagine as long as it wraps around these Mii characters.
Yeah,
and,
so
and it works in the game, and so they can churn these out a lot faster.
The first party costumes they had in this release is the Black Knight from why am I blanking on the name of
Monty Python?
No, God.
What do you mean the Black Knight? Sonic?
No, God damn it. How am I blanking on like Intelligent Systems strategy.
Fire Emblem.
Yeah, from the Fire Emblem on the GameCube. It was
from Fire Emblem. I didn't know where you were going with that.
Yeah, that's one of the costumes. There was this character you just couldn't beat, so the entire game was basically just stay away from him. That's one of the so you just have this big hulking armor on your Mii Fighter. Huh. And they did another Samus suit. There's a bear suit.
You know what? I would accept a Waluigi suit for the Mii Fighters if it was like huge and ridiculous looking like King K. Rool.
So they did one for Krom. Which gives you some hope, because Krom is off the list because he's in somebody's Smash Assist. That was in there today.
Okay,
There's a teddy bear suit. I'm not
I guess
kidding.
I feel like Krom is already in the game because of Lucina, but I guess she's technically not Krom.
No, and then my favorite one that they did in this set is the one for KK Slider, which looks like you're wearing pajamas with KK Slider's head on them.
Yeah, it's good.
These
and that's what I want Waluigi to be. I want you to be wearing a Waluigi suit.
What if it was like a hat?
Like a dude
and
at
just,
Disney World.
Like you have the costume, and then it's like his hat and like a fake, like a clearly fake beard, nose, and mustache. like just blatantly fake.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of fun stuff they could do with this.
I'm okay with this. Like to me, that's keeping us talking about this game because it's so, like, they understand it needs to be really dumb.
I mean, I get some amusement out of it even if I don't pay for them, you know?
Yeah, just looking at them in the shop, I was laughing.
Just go on there and play for fun online, and there's no telling what people are going to show up.
Oh, yeah, like the... Oh, it's good. I really enjoy it. This is what I want. I want them to keep making... And, you know, they're not super expensive. They have two new stages, the Peach Castle and the Hyrule Castle stages. But the costumes are like 75 cents.
I don't think those N64 stages are worth $2.
No,
I don't.
I'm not necessarily sure they are either. But I
bought the Kirby one, I think, and it's not that great.
But I'll pay 75 cents to look like a teddy bear just to screw with people when I'm playing them online. Like just dropping that on John when we're on Skype is just to hear him laugh for 5 minutes while he's getting the crap kicked out of him by a teddy bear.
Oh, hey, man, that's not going to happen. I mean, while I'm beating your ass, you mean?
John, what's our record against each other? It's pretty one-sided.
Oh, Gauntlet Throne.
I don't know. Well, to me, it's not about numbers and victories and stuff like that.
Well, I'll
just
tell
play,
you a game that
I
is about numbers
game,
and victories.
James.
Okay.
And that's Dragon Quest XI, which is coming to the 3DS and the PS4 and maybe the NX.
It was in the trailer
for two distinct Dragon Quest games. They announce it's in development.
Yes, they're definitely going to make it.
I would imagine the it's being considered is because Nintendo told them, don't say you're making an NX game. I said, well, we'll say we're talking about making an NX game.
Hey,
we're talking about going back to the office and continuing development on that NX game.
Like, can you imagine just. So my favorite
part... I think it's very good press for Nintendo.
Yeah,
that
I know, but
Nintendo
dropping
these
Nintendo
hints about NX support for Dragon Quest.
Nintendo
that
doesn't,
only
doesn't want to get
Nintendo.
Scooped yeah. because the best part about this announcement is that they could not have made an announcement that more accurately tells us abso-fucking-lutely nothing about what the NX is than they managed to pull off.
Yeah, right. It's like they picked the one game that
they picked the two games, Sean.
Well, it's. I mean. You're absolutely right. I mean, Dragon Quest has never
two distinct games.
It has never been a series that has chained itself to the best hardware out there. So that's out the window. That tells us nothing.
Well, so here's the thing. So I would imagine Dragon Quest XI is going to be a Ni No Kuni situation, where there's this handheld version and then there's a console version. They tell the same story, but they're different. But they didn't, when they said there's an NX version, okay, which one is it?
Yeah, that's the fun part. Is that going to be closer? Is that going to be an upgraded 3DS game, or is that going to be a downgraded PS4 game, or is that going to be an upgraded PS4
game? Or just the PS4 game? It's like,
yeah,
and then,
exactly.
And then Dragon Quest,
we have no idea.
Dragon Quest X. Guess what? There's already a 3DS version of that game. It doesn't work. It's busted because it streams to the 3DS, but it exists. It's like, so are you telling me this is the 3DS game on a new handheld and it'll actually work? Is this another version of the up-resed Wii game? Is this the up-resed Wii U game, or is this the PS4 game you're making of it? Like, they could not have done this in the trolley. It's beautiful. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
You know what else is beautiful, James, is the game itself, because I am so lusting after Dragon Quest XI, especially the PS4 version, which I'm, you know, I mean, obviously I was disappointed that there's no announcement of a localization yet.
I would strongly advise you start learning Japanese now.
I I don't know how I feel about it because, you know, the last time they made a console, a big console offline main number Dragon Quest. I mean, this is, I know I'm not discounting, you know, what 10 is, but I think 11 is going to have more worldwide appeal and it's going to be easier to bring out in other territories than 10. And I mean, and the last time they did this was with 8, and it was a pretty big success in America. Much better than 7 for sure, which was a disaster 10 years earlier. So
I mean, eight
think there's a chance, but I am honestly, I am open to importing the Japanese version because PS4, unlike 3DS, is region free. So I will play that game regardless because I'm a huge Dragon Quest fan and I think both versions of this look excellent. I would love to play the 3DS version. I'm not going to buy a Japanese 3DS to play it. So it better come out in English at some point. I mean, geez, if Square doesn't want to do it and if Nintendo doesn't want to do it, let Atlus do it. They do this shit all day, every day. Atlus localizes 20 JRPGs a year, whether they should or not. Let them do Dragon Quest, please.
I will say,
because I want to play it so bad.
I will say Dragon Quest 8 sold less than a million units in every region except Japan. It wasn't a huge success.
No, it wasn't a huge success, but it was a reasonable success. It did well.
It did okay.
Yeah.
So I mean,
in Japan, it sold what? Probably it sold 7-8 million or
something. It's a Monster Hunter situation. The difference is Monster Hunter games actually come out in the West.
But there's a hell of a lot less.
They don't sell that great, but they keep doing it.
There is a hell of a lot less localization to do from a fully voiced Dragon Quest game to a Monster Hunter game.
Yeah, I mean, I just highly doubt that it would not come out in the West. In fact, I don't really know where that whole sentiment comes from.
Because they've had like 6 Dragon Quest games on 3DS that haven't come out.
But they're all bullshit spinoffs.
No, they're not.
Some of them are remakes. But
okay.
Last number, Dragon Quest, didn't come out anywhere.
And it's out on literally everything.
Yeah, because it was a subscription-based title.
So we can do subscriptions. We've been doing them for a long time.
Wasn't one of the original Monster Hunter games come out in the West or subscription-based in Japan?
I mean, Square Enix makes a subscription-based Final Fantasy game and sells it in America. And by the way, they've been doing that for over a decade. Why can't they do it with Dragon Quest on PCs
and on PS4? I mean,
there is a PC version of Dragon Quest X.
Yeah,
hasn't
come out here either.
There's an Android version of Phantasy Star Online 2.
The subscription stuff with Dragon Quest X, that's a big deal, man.
It is, but
it's a big deal because you're taking a series that. That its popularity in the West is kind of questionable. Mm-hmm. Certainly not on the level in terms of Square Enix is concerned. You can't compare it to like any of the Final Fantasy titles.
Well, yeah,
because
you can't mess around when you're making an online Final Fantasy game.
Well, but what I'm saying is Dragon Quest. If you put a subscription barrier on top of that, no one's gonna fucking play that in the West. It's not gonna happen.
I get it. Why would you bring that over? The fan base isn't really big enough over here to justify the ongoing costs of relocalizing every time they do a new patch or add new content to it. And I think that is a strong argument that's probably a big part of the reason that it never came out here. And I'm sad that I haven't gotten to play Dragon Quest X, but that's the past. I've pretty much completely given up on it. I think 11 is going to be a somewhat different situation because it is an offline, single-player, traditional Japanese RPG.
But those 3DS games, you think the barrier to localize would be even smaller. And they're on a platform there's more out there. There's more 3DSs out there than there are PS4s.
Yeah. Well, I haven't completely – I have more hope for the 3DS remakes than I do for 10. I still think 7 is and 8 probably more so because 8 is a more of a known quantity in the West. Because it did actually sell something, whereas 7 was a total bomb in the West. It was a terrible localization. So, you know, I think they could even eventually maybe do a 7 and 8 combo pack or something like that. And try to fluff it up, kind of like they did with Puzzle and Dragons. It's like, look at this weird thing from Japan, but you get a lot of it for...
I don't think Square Enix wants to devalue that brand that much, debase it so
it
far.
It doesn't
as
have
like,
that
have
much make... value in the West. And it probably won't
ever.
It's got
a hell of a lot more
them.
Than a Puzzle and Dragons, though.
Well, I don't know. But anyway, I am very, very excited by the look of it and everything we're seeing about it. I think the 3DS version looks really cool with the, you know, the simultaneous view. Apparently, that's only for the beginning of the game. I don't know why that would be the case.
There must be some story mechanic that changes up what you're seeing then.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you have to choose, like in Fates, Fire Emblem Fates, you have to choose which path, whether you're going to play in weird retro 8-bit style graphics on the bottom screen or beautiful 3D graphics on the top. I think most people will choose the pretty ones, but yeah. We'll see.
I don't know. It's
but it's a neat idea, and I like what they're going for there.
I'm and then I think they showed off like the 75 Dragon Quest spinoffs they're working on. Like So basically they've cribbed every major series or every major game now that they can. So look forward to Dragon Quest Pro Skater next year and Dragon Quest Terraria in about 2 years.
Terraria, that would make sense because they're already doing Minecraft. And I the more I think about it, more that I think this Dragon Quest Minecraft clone is a good idea. And it makes sense to me because Dragon Quest is known for being so retro, you know, so stuck in the past. And Minecraft is very much about that retro aesthetic and that mindset. So I think that could work really well. It's not necessarily appealing to me, but I think I'm hopeful that that may actually catch on a little bit in the West and kind of elevate the identity here of Dragon Quest.
Are
and then maybe that makes them bring over more of the RPGs.
There are a million Minecraft clones at this point.
But some of them are really successful.
Just the sheer quantity of Dragon Quest version of game you've already heard of that they've announced in the last few months has been comical at this point.
A Dragon Quest version of Xenoblade Chronicles X?
What?
Yeah, just blow your mind.
No, because you just said an RPG version of a series that is already an RPG.
Mm-hmm. It would probably look a lot like Dragon Quest XI.
How about a
PS4? That's why I'm excited
Dragon
for
Quest
it.
Dragon Quest game that's just, I don't, like, how about they localize one first before we get excited?
Yes,
again?
Please. Any of them.
Let's
any
let them
Dragon
let's,
Quest
let's
game.
Let's let Square Enix pretend like they remember that series exists outside of Japan first, and then we can get excited.
11 baby is coming, steps. Baby.
That's fair. But 11, it's real. It's coming out on Nintendo. It's NX. That's exciting. It's mysterious and exciting.
So, I don't know. I'm hoping NX, that means it's PS4 level hardware, which would be kind of sweet.
That would be pretty sweet, yeah. Let's see. We've got the new Mario Maker details we could talk about for a few minutes. Apparently, there's going to be 99 pixel retro 8-bit costumes that you can get, just like the Link and the Bowser that we saw at E3.
And
that seems like
trainer.
A lot.
Well, think about any amiibo there are now.
Yeah, I guess they're doing one for every single amiibo.
That's a dagger in the heart right there.
But you can unlock them without amiibo. Good.
Yeah, there's a way. We don't know how difficult it's going to be, how much work. But yeah, there's a way, which is good. I'm very happy to see that.
It's based on the 100 Mario, what was the 100 Marios?
Yeah, but we still don't really know anything about that.
Yeah, we
either.
Do. We know what it is. It downloads 100 stages from the internet, and you play through them.
Randomly?
I think it's based on ratings. There's also a 10 Mario challenge, which is obviously 10 stages.
Okay, maybe you can unlock them through that, because that 100 seems quite a burden.
I don't know if you have to do them all in one sitting. I think it's like, okay, I'll burn. I can't imagine you get, all right, you've cleared 100 devious stages.
Yeah.
Here's your.
It only took me 12 hours.
Here's your 8-bit D-make of Wii Fit Trainer. Good job. Only 98 more to go.
Yeah, but the fun thing about this is that all of these are 8-bit Super Mario Brothers 1 style representations of a lot of characters that didn't exist until way into the 3D era. So, you know, we saw the Wii Fit Trainer, which I thought was amusing, but, you know, now we know that for every single amiibo, there's going to be a little 8-bit sprite created of those. And that's the exciting part to me is I can't wait to see all of them.
And this is the first time the Pokemon companies allowed Pokemon amiibo to show up in a different game. Like Yoshi, if you tap a Pokemon amiibo on Yoshi, you don't get a Pokemon themed Yoshi character. You just get some weird looking Yoshi. So this is the first time like legit ass Pokemon have shown up in one of these amiibo crossover things.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing all those. I think there'll be a lot of really fun YouTube videos of people playing through levels as these different characters and creating levels themed around these characters. You know, hopefully we'll be able to do that if there's enough controls in the stage creator.
So there was that video that I showed John. I guess that one was out of Japan. That is just like every time I see PR video for this game, it becomes increasingly apparent that it was made by Miyamoto has that interview quote where he says when he makes a Mario game, he first designs World 2-1 because he wants to make a harder stage, and then he goes back and softens it up and turns it into 1-1. Mm-hmm. It's like this was designed by the part of him that goes, I'm going to make 3-1 first, and I'm not going to change it, and I'm going to make it 1-1.
Yeah, there's a lot of silly stuff in there with like multiple enemies stacked on top of each other in a pyramid.
Oh, yeah.
You have to go through all of them, and if you hit them all and you get about 15 1-ups.
Yep. And the then you just keep the skinny doing mushroom it. That showed up was pretty good. Where you just this tall skinny Mario. It was just like, what are you doing?
And you jump differently when you get that.
Yeah,
like that was at E3 last year, actually.
Yeah, I mean that whole game is bizarre. It's
it really looks like they're having fun with it, which is exciting to see.
I meant to mention this when we had our email last week about these NX crossover games, but to me, this is the ultimate NX crossover game.
Mm-hmm.
This game makes so much sense to show up on the next platform just right at the start.
They could even make it like a special version of it that adds, you know, Mario 2, Mario USA stuff or something.
Maybe it's just DLC in the other version. Because then you could still maybe make it so they could share levels. That way you don't have to rebuild your level pool from scratch. It would be really cool. It would be a good, you know, hey, we're not going to make it on a Mario game for the launch system. You're going to make it.
Yo. What if it's built into the system, everybody gets a Mario Maker?
You get a Mario Maker.
What if this is now basically just part of the Nintendo offering? When you buy a Nintendo, you get all the Mario
if you just got a thing called Mario Maker Channel, and it was just Mario Maker?
Yeah, it's just served up
channels. And then if you want to actually make them, hey, click this button, and you can buy the level editor.
Yeah. Then you can subscribe to Mario TV Guide, and it tells you when to tune in to catch your favorite Mario levels.
God. Yeah, it'd be really sweet, you know, instead of kind of taking it back to the old school where every single time you got a new Nintendo console, you got a new Mario game with it, like packed in.
You got a way to make all the Mario games.
Yeah.
There's going to be a QVC-style DLC marketing show hosted by Dark Gary.
I thought it was going to be hosted by Squirtle.
But it co-hosts those two together.
Oh, okay,
it's like
good.
Regis and Kathy Lee, but it's Dark Gary and Squirtle.
Great. Yeah. Is he selling knives on YouTube at 3 in the morning?
They're both drinking wine the whole time. Okay. Next topic.
Yeah.
Do we want to talk about Red Ash?
I do.
I figured you care, James. I think you probably care.
I care, but not in the way you're probably expecting.
Okay, so explain to us what Red Ash is and
it's
why people
It's a scam is what Red Ash is.
Yeah, totally.
But okay, what are the details of the scam though? What was pitched?
So, Concept, Inafune's company. Uh-huh. I guess it's been about 2 years now they did their Kickstarter for Mighty No. 9.
Yeah, Concept, creators of such released popular games as ...
Yeah, well, because Concept creator of nothing, because Concept doesn't actually have any development staff. They are
they just a Kickstarter marketing?
They
company
are a
at this
front.
Point?
They
a front.
They hire somebody else to make the games. So they were involved in the development of what was that game that was Mega Man Zero inspired but was terrible, but Guillaume liked it.
Azure Striker Gunvolt.
Yeah, they were involved in that, but they didn't make it.
There's a sequel to that coming.
There is, because
interesting. That game was a surprise hit, apparently.
They've done a couple of things. They did something for one of that Level 5 series.
Mm-hmm. They did two Mighty No. 9 Kickstarters, and that game's still not out.
Yeah. So then they did.
But hey, I did like that game a lot.
I played
it, and at first I was like, "What the fuck is this?" It took me a while. But
I've played a little bit of it, and I was like, the feel's not right. The feel's not right. The feel's not right. The feel's not right. My head just kept telling me.
Yeah, but I got to a point where it started to feel right, and it felt really right.
I don't know.
And I started to get this big smile
on
my face.
So the thing about Mighty No. 9 is that, A, it's not out yet. It's already supposed to be out. But, B, what really irked me about that game was when they announced it, one of the things that they're like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if Mega Man could have stolen all the powers instead of just 8 random people? Well, in this game, all enemies will give you powers. And then, like, hey, it's our second Kickstarter. Also, we cut that. It's like, you've done three distinct crowdfunding campaigns for this game. You've announced a movie deal for a game that's not going to be out for a year and a cartoon series. Fuck you. So
yeah, they do seem to be too big for their britches.
Yeah.
I mean, they really seem to be overselling themselves and under delivering so far.
That's an Inafune businessman doing business thing. And it's way too far at this point. So even though this game's not out, and even though Mighty No. 9, you know, I'm glad you enjoyed it, but there, in the last 6 to 7 months, there's been rumblings about, you know, especially among like hardcore Mega Man fans who are like, I don't know, like I don't like the look of that game. Like there's something about how it's Unreal 3 and it kind of looks goofy and.
Yeah, I don't love the visual style, but I'm telling you, I was very skeptical when I sat down with it, and it didn't work for me at first, but it did click, and it clicked pretty hard, and I sat there for a lot longer than I needed to with it at E3.
All right.
I was testing every power. I wanted to see all the stages. In particular, there's a bulldozer item that when you use it in the right stage or the right piece of a stage and you just start blasting through fools really fast and you feel so powerful, and there's technique to it. You have to, there's kind of a rhythm. There's a timing that you have to do in order to keep this chain going. But when you get it, it felt like what Azure Striker Gunvolt was going for. And to me, it felt like in that E3 demo of Mighty No. 9, it felt like it actually got there.
And again,
it had the missing piece of momentum for me, which I talked about a lot with Azure Striker Gunvolt not having. So I was really kind of had a big grin on my face when I was playing. I'm excited for it.
So yeah, like that one, they had a, again, he's not, their concept's not making this game. Inti Creates is making it.
Mm-hmm.
But they, you know, they had a Kickstarter campaign for it. It made just shit ton of money. Like it was a huge Kickstarter success. They then had another non-Kickstarter crowdfunding campaign to do Japanese voice packs. And I'm like, what are you doing, asshole? Make the game.
Yeah, why does this game need voice?
You just got like $42 billion from Kickstarter. What are you doing? And like at the same time, that's when they announced the TV deal. What the fuck is wrong with you? So fast forward about another year.
Hey, remember when Mega Man added voices and that made it a lot better?
Yeah. Iris!
Like, wouldn't you want to pay more so that Mega Man could have voices?
God, so fast forward a year and that game's still not out. Deep Silver's now involved because businessman gonna business. And they announce not one, but two distinct Kickstarter campaigns based on the Mega Man series that I didn't want a sequel to the Mega Man series, mainline Mega Man. Like, that's great, that's fine. I wanted a Mega Man Zero sequel, a Mega Man X sequel, or a Mega Man Legends sequel. Like, one of those three. Give me one of those three and I'm happy. Like, the only one I didn't want was the one you gave me. Like, I would even take the RPG series, because those are kind of cool in their own right. They announced, essentially, they called it Red Ash, which is a play on words for the canceled Mega Man Legends 3 demo that Capcom was going to sell you, because Capcom is the home of business doing business.
Yeah, it's Redash, right? Because Mega Man Legends in Japan is called Mega Man Dash or Rockman Dash.
Yes.
So it's Red Ash is Redash. We're redoing Dash.
Fucking
3.
Asshole. Yeah. But like I said, he learned business doing business.
I think Red Ash is a bad title, but
it's
think
terrible.
The joke is clever.
From the home of business doing business, so he knows what's up. And that demo actually was completed and was canceled after Inafune left, because they ultimately canceled Mega Man Legends 3, which is going to be a 3DS game, and I was super excited and I was heartbroken.
Yeah.
So fuck you, Capcom.
Probably would have been pretty cool if they'd made it.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it turned out that really their incredibly dumb business gonna do business plan was, we're gonna use the demo to finance the game. What the fuck is wrong with you? So they, you know, they did this big public relations campaign, which Inafune has copied wholesale for Red Ash. So Red Ash,
say copied, but I mean, it was, I think, all his ideas.
He had
place.
Left. Remember, he left. He'd been trying to get a Mega Man Legends 3, and then he left right as they were announcing Mega Man Legends 3. So they announced two distinct Kickstarter campaigns, one to make a movie, an animated movie about these characters, and another to make a spiritual successor to Mega Man Legends at the same time. Are you insane? What is
How's
wrong with you?
How's the movie one doing?
Badly.
Badly?
They're both doing badly.
The game one was doing, like, not terribly, but didn't look like it was going to quite make it.
It will not make it. Yeah. It's a disaster. It is a disaster.
It is a very poorly run campaign on a number of levels.
It felt like they rushed it out the door because Iga beat Mighty No. 9. Like, it felt like what happened. Like, it was such... It was like, hey, we're making this game. Here's three pieces of art. Give us all your money. Like, that's how it went down. You're like, what the fuck is happening right now? Yeah. Like, there was almost no art. There was... The video didn't tell you anything. There was no gameplay at all to show. I mean, it was nothing.
And they did finally release an actual playable demo that is apparently terrible.
Yeah, I've heard it's
there's
awful.
Really nothing to it. So I don't know why they bothered. But
awful.
The weird thing about Red Ash or Red Ash.
Oh, hold on. There's more. There's more stupid shit. I want to get all of this out because it's unbelievable. Like it is when I used to say I'm really worried about what Kickstarter is going to become. This is what I was talking about, because at the same time, the exact same time, he launched this anime one that actually may make it, shockingly. It's still got $30,000 to go in 3 days, but the base, the very, very base of what you get if this thing gets funded is like a 6-minute video.
Ooh.
Or it's, that's it. Like, that's the whole fucking thing. And it's...
Who is such a fan of this property that isn't yet
exist.
For sale?
It doesn't exist. It's like,
that,
are you
that
insane?
Has no releases under it that they so want to see a 6-minute video of bad. That,
I can't.
That's a trailer. A 6-minute video?
I can't. Yeah. I just,
that's a long trailer.
Oh, and like, I'm trying to remember what the final number they had to get to make the full movie they wanted to do, but it was huge. I'm like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, hey, I mean, these things are expensive. That's usually why we ask rich people and corporations to pay for them.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. The first one is for $150,000 was 12 minutes. But hey, mm-hmm. If it got to 410, it'd get to 20 minutes.
All right, well, I mean, 12 minutes is... Short. It's a respectable short film length. It's a short film.
But why would you launch still? Like
I mean, who are they selling this to? It would make a lot more sense.
But don't
to maybe
worry,
do
don't
this
worry.
After there's a game or something,
you'll
that
get
people...
the full story of this anime if it hits its 10th goal at $2.48 million.
That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
I'd like to believe that that's an honest. Budgeting, you know,
but it's
and that's really what it would cost, because I know animation is super expensive. It's just, it's weird to go out and ask strangers for $2.5 million to make something that they know basically nothing about,
or to ask them for $130,000 for an incomplete story.
You know, we're not going out and saying, "Hey, kickstart our Star Wars movie."
Yeah,
you know,
so
you're going and saying, "Kickstart our Red Ash animated movie."
Yep.
What is Red Ash?
It's like,
what is Red
Ash?
No one
it's
knows
like, guys,
and we're
I have this idea
you.
For a book. I'm going to do
pay
a Kickstarter.
Pay me right
$2.5
now.
Million.
So yeah, the best part is, weird. All right, so the game's at about $480,000 right now on an $800,000 goal. It's got 3 days to go. It's fucked. It's no way in hell it's going to make it. It's gone down, actually, since they released the demo. It's lost $1,800.
And it might have gone down in light of this recent news.
Yes,
but I'll explain why in a sec.
In business doing business, so I saw this one coming. I didn't think it'd be this soon. He signed a deal with a publisher to fund the game anyway.
The Kickstarter is over. Now,
well, no, the Kickstarter is over. Let's be clear.
That is a brazen call to not even wait for this thing to die.
Here's what was going to happen. The Kickstarter was going to end, and then he's going to find a publisher, which is what happened with Mighty No. 9.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is his, again, business doing business as a pejorative. Like, this is what he does.
I'm just saying, could he have sat on this for a week, this news?
Well,
that he found a publisher?
Because he realized he's about to lose so much face. Like, so he had to do something. So here's what's funny about this. Fuse is a Chinese video game publisher that's a little bit sketchy.
Yeah.
But,
real sketchy.
But don't worry. Their actual corporate offices are incorporated in the Cayman Islands. Everything's fine. right next door to the headquarters of Gawker Media. So everything's fine.
Man,
don't worry
that's
about
awesome.
It. Yeah, so
Cayman Islands.
So this whole thing is just
Ukraine wasn't available? What?
Like, to me, this is just like, this is the ultimate coming home to roost of everything Inafune does that makes me crazy. And like, this is the first real Kickstarter disaster we've ever seen.
This sounds like an 80s cocaine movie.
Yeah, it's you know what it sounds like? It sounds like the Gizmodo.
I was going to say, what was that dumb handheld
That's
thing?
That's what it's all exactly we need is Inafune Gizmodo to crash a Ferrari into another Ferrari and then claim a Scotsman that he just met was driving it. That's all we need.
Didn't he make up a mysterious character who like
German.
Jumped in his car
it was
and
a
drove
German.
It around
yeah,
with
it was
him
a
mi- still
it was
in
this,
it?
This mysterious German he couldn't name that he let drive his Ferrari. That's all we need at this point. Like this is chaos. And it's,
yeah, Red Ash is just getting weirder and weirder. But supposedly, the game will now be made regardless of the Kickstarter outcome, and the Kickstarter is now, if it succeeds, it will pay
Which
for extra content in the game. It will not, and in fact, if this pisses you off, or if you just don't want to pay for extras, you can just, even if you've already pledged, you could just withdraw your pledge, and I think some people are probably doing that, because it's like, if the only reason I pledged was to make sure the game would get made, and you just told me that the game is going to get made,
the game was
going to
get made anyway,
then I'm going to withdraw my pledge because that's the only reason I did it. Because I want to play the game.
There's no way he secured a publisher that fast once Kickstarter was clearly a disaster. Like they knew they were going to do this to begin with.
So he had it in his pocket.
So
the whole time.
If you go look at what IGA did, and you go look at what Playtonic did, they said, "Hey, there's other money in this game. Like there are other people involved in funding this game. Your money is to make sure the investors, A, are stay on board, and B, to add content to the game."
And that's okay, because it's honest.
Yeah, they told us. This asshole's like, no, the game won't get made unless you give us this money, actually.
Well, you know, now that you mention it, I kind of am talking
like,
to this guy.
I'm talking to this guy in the Cayman Islands who operates out of China. Great. Thanks.
That is sweet.
Also, we're making an anime, but that's probably not going to get funded either. Don't worry about it, though. It's only 12 minutes, and it's not going to complete the story unless you give us $2.4 million. What the hell? Oh, yeah. This guy has so much balls. Like, it's unbelievable. But what kills me is, why not wait until Mighty No. 9 is out? And the only thing I could think of is he's worried that game is going to get bad reception. Because why not wait? Because then, hey, wow, they just put out this game. This whole kickstarting thing works.
Exactly. It's like if and when the Shovel Knight guys go back to Kickstarter and say, okay, you saw what we can do.
Right.
Now we're going to set our sights a little higher and do something a little different and exciting. And you know that we're capable of doing it. We know that Comcept is capable of making a good game yet.
All
I don't
they've
know.
Made
they've
is,
proven
don't.
It.
The only thing that they've really done is like... are two 3DS download games. Oh,
yeah, there was a Guild Zero 2 game, wasn't
they
there?
They did. I think they've done two Guild games at this point. I think they might have been involved in Liberation Maiden.
Really?
So there's also, I mean, okay. there's also a PS3 visual novel they were involved in.
Oh, man.
Because Liberation Maiden has a PS3 visual novel, because I don't know. Why
Every
would
Japanese mech game eventually gets a visual novel spin-off.
Well, especially when they have a high school teenage girl as the president of Japan.
As I said, every Japanese met game convention.
They may not have been involved with Liberation. No, Liberation Maiden was Goichi Suda's game. That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of course it was. Yeah. Oh,
Grasshopper manufacturer. Because they manufacture teenage girl presidents of Japan.
Well,
giant flying mech suits.
Actually, they also did that with teenage cheerleader zombie hunter. So, he's got his type. I mean,
Chainsaw
this,
Lollipop or whatever it was
yeah,
called.
Yeah, this has been just this remarkable roller coaster of just kickstarting catastrophes. Like, I'm legitimately impressed at how much of a dumpster fire this one's been.
You know what? Yes, one of the worst Kickstarters I've ever seen, but I hope this game gets made. I hope we get to try it. Maybe it'll be good.
Sure. Make the game.
Do you know who's making it? Who would be the developer?
Oh, yeah. It's being made by... Oh, that's the other part of the thing that really makes me laugh. It's being made by Studio 4C, which the only things that they've been listed as developers on are a bunch of Otome games on the PSP. Yeah.
Wow. Woo!
Yeah.
So allegedly they were secret co-developers on a bunch of other games, but I don't know.
Sure.
Well,
sure.
You know, that's not much to go on. So that's a little scary. But
yeah, I'm just...
again, I hope it's good. I hope it comes out so we at least get to try it and decide for ourselves.
It's the fucking weirdest thing
but
I've ever seen.
Maybe Kickstarter was not the best way to go about this, or maybe this was bad timing. I think there is actually a lot of bad timing here.
I think this is the first time where I've seen a Kickstarter campaign where a ton of red flags went up and the marks didn't bite. Because I've seen ones where the red flags went up and I went, are you sure, guys?
Night Trap failed.
It did.
I felt good for humanity on that.
There was that one that, God, I can't remember what that there was the one that, oh, the Yogg's Cast Adventures, where like you looked at it and you're like, there's no way this is going to end well. Like, everyone sees this, right? No, they got millions of dollars, and then it was a colossal failure.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, maybe people are starting to, you know, tune into these red flags and go, okay.
I hope so. I mean, Kickstarter should work best when the supporters who parade around it and look for things to throw money at are skeptical and
right.
demanding.
Yeah.
I think that's when you get the best outcomes. That's when you really it when you raise the bar and you say, no, you really have to be on top of your game and be good at your shit in order to be successful in this arena.
Right.
That's the free market. That's what you hope is that only the best companies and the best projects and the most likely to be successful will rise to the top and get made. And that's
let's put it this way. That first pitch for Red Ash would have never, ever, ever gone in front of a publisher because it was so barren. It was so lacking of any details whatsoever.
It's either amateurish or it's disdainful of its audience, I think.
You need to at least approach this with the same respect you would approach a publisher.
Absolutely. Like,
you know, have a slice to give them, you know, post a video or something like that.
Because ultimately you're still – and not a video of Inafune going, hey, man, we're making a game.
Convince me. Don't try to take advantage of what you think is my nostalgia for Mega Man Legends.
Yeah, it's like you have to do something more than what I could do in my bedroom right now.
John's not even wearing any clothes. And he could probably do that promo.
Absolutely.
John's going to kickstart Riri Dash.
Yep.
Hey, I know some people seem – very upset about the way Red Ash has gone down. I kind of look at it and say, this is how Kickstarter is supposed to work. So I don't really see a problem here. And the game's going to get made, so you haven't lost anything. You don't even have to pledge.
To me, the only thing that would have really topped this was be like on the last day of pledging, Capcom goes, fuck it, we're going to release that demo for the Mega Man Legends 3. It was done anyway. Like, that would really just be the ultimate, just this whole thing going into a big mushroom cloud.
And that would be great if we would finally get to play that.
One person outside of Capcom has played that demo. Like, that's the craziest impressions I've ever read, because he wrote them after it got canceled. It's like, I'm the only person who will ever get to play this. I've got to write really good impressions now.
Well, do you remember where you can find those?
You Google them, you'll find them.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds interesting. Well, I think we do need to wrap it up here, but maybe one last thing we can talk about very quickly. We just found out today that Final Fantasy Explorers is coming to the West in January.
Because one of those franchises still exists in the West.
Yeah. Final Fantasy is still reasonably popular here. And on 3DS, I think, you know, you look at the sales of Bravely Default and you say, there's probably room for a Final Fantasy game to do well if we play it right. And I think you're you and John, because there are some Monster Hunter tendencies here, and I wonder if that's appealing. But I think you guys maybe are in the target demo for something like this. How do you feel about it?
I'm surprised, mostly. Like,
yeah?
I looked at that game and said, yo, this game is Japan as hell.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately, it's Bravely Default, which I thought was a surefire winner. Square Enix passed on, ultimately. Remember, Nintendo brought that over. Nintendo eventually said, you idiots, you've got like a 3 million seller here. What's wrong with you? All right, we'll take the money. That's fine. This seemed like a much less surefire thing. Because, I mean, essentially it's, you know, I was cracking wise on Square Enix's propensity to put Dragon Quest on top of other people's creative ideas and go, it's a new game, guys! But, I mean, this game feels, I mean, I watched that like 3-hour demo they did with Japanese celebrities of this game, and it's not entirely Monster Hunter, but there is definitely, I mean, there was definitely some monster hunting going on in the design room for this game. Like, they're like, all right guys, we need to play the next 6 hours and then we're gonna come up with a game real quick. So like, it felt like a game that was pandering to Japan, not like a game that's focused on Japan, but
like it was being released in Japan because they know it'll have some measure of success.
Like, yeah, this game felt like a game that should be on the Vita to fill the void where Monster Hunter is.
Yeah.
Well, you say pandering, but then I've also heard it's very good.
Yeah.
The Famicast guys, one or two of them, I think, have played it. Maybe Danny. And it sounds like it's a high quality game.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's why I'm interested.
It looked cool when they were showing the demo. And admittedly, what I've read since then, it's not a pure Monster Hunter's just just cribbing job. Like there,
yeah,
there's,
but it's a more action oriented version of Final Fantasy. It's still
it's,
some RPG
it's
stuff.
Squad based. It's squad based, and you're hunting big monsters, and you get quests for hunting these monsters. And in fact, during that 3-hour demo of all these Japanese pop celebrities trying to kill it, like they didn't complete a single mission, but it was funny just watching them completely screw everything up. So like, yeah, like, so maybe I shouldn't be super surprised because Monster Hunter 4U is done really well outside Japan by the standards of that series.
Yeah.
So maybe that was Square Enix's green light to drop this thing outside Japan.
I think it's also done really well for a third-party 3DS game outside Japan.
Yeah.
I mean, relative to all others, I think it's doing pretty well. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's the kind of game that could stand out on the 3DS,
mm-hmm.
really.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So. This is January, right?
Yeah, Square does this sometimes.
January 26th, the January 29th, I think is what the dates for.
They really like to release Final Fantasy games soon after Christmas, and I've never understood that.
Maybe it's just they don't want to deal with that big blowout of, like, the media buys are super expensive in December. Maybe they just don't want to deal with that. November into December.
Yeah, or maybe they don't want it to get lost.
Yeah, I mean, you can be successful in January. There have been some big hits that came out in January because people have money now. Well, kids have money. Adults are broke.
Yeah,
but that's okay because the kids are now taking that money they got for Christmas and buying games. They have gift cards and they have stuff like that. So there's a certain business presence. This is late January though, so that's kind of out of that window. I don't know, but I think this also butts up against the release of Bravely Second, which.
Because
that's early 2016 too, I think. So
as far as we know, I bet Nintendo's savvy enough to space these out a little bit.
Or they'll just say, or they'll just tell Square Enix, we're going to bury you in marketing.
Then again, I guess, do we know for sure whether Nintendo is publishing themselves Bravely Second? I don't think we know for sure whether they're doing that again.
Yes.
Maybe Square Enix saw the light.
Nintendo is doing it everywhere but Japan.
Correct.
Okay. Yep. You know what though? I bet they signed that deal for both games. And I bet Square Enix is kicking the shit out of themselves for that one. Because if I was Nintendo and I thought that game was going to be successful, I'd be like, hey, we'll do both.
It was a surprise hit. And I've heard that Bravely Second fixes a lot of things from the first one. So I already liked it, but there's certainly plenty of things that I wish were better. And I'm excited to hear more about Bravely Second.
It's just 2016 right now.
Eventually try it out. Yeah, it does feel like it's going to be a while. All right, guys. Well, I think we have enough material here for a whole podcast. So we're going to wrap it up. We are going to be doing Blaster Master next week. James, do you want to talk about that?
It's Blaster Master. It's on the virtual console. It's on everything virtual console at this point.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Except NX, but maybe one day.
Well, everything that's out.
Mm-hmm. Play it. It's good.
You should play it.
It is a great game.
We've got a thread. You can talk really about good. It. I'll have posted in there by the time this episode goes live. I just haven't had a chance to do it yet. It's not the kind of game we'd normally do for Retroactive, which is why we're doing it because Nintendo picked it. But
it's why I'm excited about it.
But that was kind of the goal of this Retroactive was to do something different. And ultimately the Kirby week happened 2 weeks later.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited for Guillaume to come back and get to talk about that game with all four of us there. It's also good that he's going to be back next week because that's going to be it's a big week for me. It's going to be my last week as host of the show. I just said it out loud, didn't I?
There it is.
This has been in the works for a while since before E3. It's something I've been thinking about for years. And this time it stuck. So I'll have a lot more to explain and talk about next week, and we'll talk about it together, and we'll sort out our feelings, and it's gonna be dramatic. I think I'm ready for it. I'm as ready as I'm ever gonna be. And so after 7.5 years of hosting this podcast, I'm gonna step down. James is going to take over, and he's going to do an amazing job. We've talked about it quite a bit, and he has tons of great ideas, and he's going to be running the show, coming up with the ideas, promoting it, making sure somebody can edit it every week.
Yeah, we've only screwed that one up. We've only screwed that up like twice this year, so we're doing pretty good.
You know, making sure the articles are done and the feeds are done and Now Playing is there and all the things that have to get done every single week that I've been doing a lot of that stuff for a long time. And,
don't worry, the feeds will only get screwed up once a week. It'll be fine.
So Johnny, just to be clear, you're stepping away from the podcast. You will not be a regular podcast member going forward.
That's correct. Yeah. I hope to be on it frequently. I mean, periodically is maybe a better word.
You've lost that call, sir.
It depends on when I'm invited
back. Let the blackballing begin.
I will be around, and I look forward to coming back sometimes to talk to you guys.
So, Johnny, does this mean that I get your parking spot?
Yes, you get my parking
spot.
Wait
a minute, wait,
sweet.
I have to...
Wait!
John just shows up and talks for 2 hours.
Hey. Yeah, but that's... We need that.
All right, John. John just shows up for 2 hours and talks for 5 minutes.
Yes. It won't be me, and I'm going to miss coming on here and talking with you guys every single week, but I'm not far. I'll be busy. I'm not completely quitting the site. I'll explain more, I think, next week about what I'm going to be doing, but it'll be a very different kind of a project. And it'll be long-term, and it will be, I think, still occasionally involving some podcasting. But at the very least, I've told you guys I'm around. I'm here to help. I'm not here to interfere. I'm not going to tell you what to do or try to, like, pull the strings.
I wish you would.
From the shadows, I want it to be your show without me, and I'm excited to hear what that sounds like. And I've always been a huge fan of the podcast and from the beginning. I've been involved with it since the very, very early days, and as the guy basically in charge of it now for over 7 years, and it's a huge part of my life, and. And it's not something I step away from lightly or without reservations, but you know, I think on the whole it's the right time to do it, and I'm looking forward to, you know, some of the changes. I'm looking forward to a new version of my life without doing the show every single week, and what's, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. I don't know exactly how I'm going to feel about that. I know I'm going to miss it, but I know that there are other things that I miss that I haven't been able to do lately, partly because of the podcast, and I'm excited to go do those things. So I have very mixed feelings about it, and you'll probably hear all of those next week when we spend a little more time and we have Guillaume here and we do it proper, but I just wanted to give people the heads up and kind of start to prepare myself for this exit. It's a big deal to me. It's a very big deal, and I know it's a big.
I was okay until you went and threw my name out there, and I went, "Oh shit, it's real."
Yeah, it's pretty real, and it's a big change for you guys, and
not for John. John's just gonna show up for 5 minutes every episode.
No, nah, I mean it'll be a new show. It'll be a different show.
These PS4 games aren't gonna talk about themselves, James. All right. I mean,
well, I'm
really
glad they
seem to buy themselves, John. So.
I'm really glad that you guys and Guillaume are all sticking around and going to keep doing it. And I was actually pretty insistent on finding a way for that to happen one way or another.
Yeah. And that was, you know, when Johnny asked me during Game of Splatoon, fuck you, Johnny. hey, let's play Splatoon.
Actually, I lured you in with the colorful sights and sounds of Splatoon.
that was my primary concern was keeping these two around for some reason that I can't quite quantify into words.
And keeping the show going.
Yeah.
In some capacity, I really care about that, just as Greg cared about it when he left. And actually that's a bit of very happy news that this is all happy for me. It's bittersweet, but it's a good thing for me. It's a positive change. But something that I think will make a lot of people very happy is that Greg's gonna be coming back to the show.
Yes. He'll be filling the fourth chair. Unless we have to edit this out at the last minute because he
chickens out.
Because he realizes how terrible an idea this is.
Yeah, because he likes sleeping at 2 in the morning.
Let's get an email confirmation of that before this episode goes live.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as a fan of Greg and as a fan of the show and as a future listener, as one of your biggest fans in the future, I'm really excited to hear that and to hear Greg and Guillaume form, you know, new relationships that they haven't had much chance to do And for all of that, the show will rebalance itself in a lot of ways, after I'm gone, because the show is our four-way relationship. It's why even when we bring in a guest, it completely changes the tone of the show and the kinds of things we talk about. It's exciting. It's a big change when you have new voices and different combinations of voices. And I'm looking forward to it. And I hope people listening will focus on that and not be sad or whatever. I mean, I know people will have a lot of questions and I'll have a lot of answers as we go forward. You know, I really appreciate the opportunity to do this for so long. It's been an incredible privilege and something that I've thrown a lot of energy into and gotten an immense amount of satisfaction and excitement and a lot of wonderful experiences and thousands of hours of incredible conversations with my friends. So it has been incredibly rich and fulfilling experience that I will look back on incredibly fondly for the rest of my life. And so I thank everybody for listening and for putting up with me and for supporting the show.
Johnny, I promise you that going forward, I will let you plan the telethon just so you don't miss it.
No, I will help you find someone to do it. How about that?
Now we've ruined the surprise of actually this is terrible.
Yeah, and Johnny, you know that after you retire, you got 5 years, then you're up for the Hall of Fame. So just keep your nose clean, if you know what I'm saying, for the next 5 years.
Why start now, John? Why start now?
I'm just saying, just on his way out, I just wanted to be prepared.
So, I mean, John, I just get nosebleeds. It's fine.
So anyway, we'll have more to say about it next week. I didn't want people to be completely ambushed by it, But yeah, I'm just putting it out there, and like I said, we'll talk about it a lot more. But anyway,
did you want to talk about the our plan for just infinite looping of our voices?
Let's save that. That's a big topic. Let's save that for next week. But actually, before I wrap up this topic, I just want to say I am really excited to be going out on Blaster Master. We are going to do that retroactive discussion next week, and it's a game that I love. I've loved for most of my life, and I cherish it a lot. It's one of my favorite NES games, so I'm really excited to go out on that discussion and do, you know, what I love about this job for so long, which is just talking about great games with you guys. So Johnny, something that I'm really looking forward to. And again, I hope people will be upbeat and positive about all this, because that's the attitude I'm trying to take too.
So Johnny, I will tell you, John's already seen, but I'm hoping John tries to one-up me here. We've got plans for your last episode.
Oh dear.
If you think Samba de Amigo was out there, just you wait. I've got all the segments on lockdown.
Is this something you're going to make me play, or is this something you're
going to
play?
Oh, this is something that I'm going to gift to the show, an experience.
Okay.
I'm hoping, John, I think you need to step your game up. I think you need to make a run at it.
I don't know, man. You outdid yourself for next week, I can tell you that.
Wow.
It's
hype. I don't know what the hell you're talking about, so I'm
every
I guess
segment
I'm
of the
surprised.
Show is going to be held to a high standard by me.
Okay,
because I figure if I'm going to take over the
Does
show,
that mean are you hosting next week?
Oh, God no, God no. I'm not in any
you're
rush
make
to start
me host my last episode.
I'm not in any rush to start that.
All right. I think we made Greg edit his last episode.
We did make Greg edit his.
Last none of us would have been able to get through it, dude. That was it was brutal. So I'm glad he did it, I guess it's only fitting that I have to host my last one.
I listened to that episode after you proposed this whole arrangement, and I went, shit, we're going to do this again?
Yeah, it'll be different. It'll be different.
I hope so.
Yeah.
That's a rough one to listen to now.
Well, because Greg is coming back, I feel like there's less of an unknown factor this time.
That's true.
So, you know, I mean, Guillaume's worked out great. Don't get me wrong, but you know, we didn't know that. There was no guarantee that he was going to be great on the show, and you know, it's been wonderful that it worked out that way. So.
I mean, John's not great on the show. We let him win. So
I have only optimism for the future. I guess that I should say that. But anyway, I know it's a kind of a weird way to go out, but I wanted to get that out there, and I didn't want it to burden down the rest of this episode. It's because it's definitely going to burden down the next one.
Yeah.
So, Anyway, we'll leave you with that. If you have anything you'd like to write in about Nintendo and video games and podcasts and whatnot, you can send it to RFN at NintendoWorldReport.com. And please do check out Blaster Master and leave your thoughts, even if you haven't played it for 20 years. Leave a few memories over in the Retroactive Forum thread. We'll use those on the episode next week when we talk about it.
Preferably about Blaster Master.
We'll see you in Splatoon and Smash Brothers. So,
I mean, if you want to troll Johnny, get your trolls in now.
That's right. This is limited time opportunity.
This weekend, next weekend, that's it.
Yeah, I'm quitting the internet after
that. That's right.
Remember, kids,
all your Magic Gathering emails this week. Yep. We need them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd love to see some magic. So, anyway, that's going to wrap up this episode.
He's quitting the show to become a pro player in Magic the Gathering.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week right here on Radio Free Nintendo.